Good evening. It is 9:02. It is April 5th. This is the weekly Monday night call for the National Liberty Alliance. And fortunately and unfortunately, we have two things going on. Unfortunately, John and Gerard are unable to make it. They're stuck in their disabled vehicle. But we have Brent Alan Winters on board, and he has graciously accepted the challenge to speak in the interim until such time as John and Gerard are available. So, Brent, why don't you take it away with your topic for the evening?
Thank you so much. This is Brent. Brent Alan Winters, commonlawyer.com. www.commonlawyer.com. We began yesterday, day before yesterday, Saturday afternoon, we began our law class on the common law of trusts, and that was at 4:00 Pacific time, and you can go to the website commonlawyer.com and see how to sign up to participate for that class. It's 15 weeks long. We have gone through a class on the common law contracts. That was almost 50 weeks, and then we did the common law of evidence, and that was almost 50 weeks, and then we did due process, which is, by the way, another word for common law. Our common law is a course that we follow. It's the processes in any given instance of fair play that we follow called due process. So we did those, and I decided after we did those, I said we better shorten these up. It was getting overwhelming to me, so this one is more like a semester or a quarter, 15 weeks long. Every Saturday, from 4 to 5 Pacific, you can extrapolate it out from there, and you get with that the good book, A Common Lawyer Translates and Annotates the Bible, translates from the original tongues, over 15,000 footnotes throughout the text of the Bible, explaining the translation, and also 123 appendices. With the course, when you sign up for the trust course, the trust at common law, get the digital Bible with that. You can get it in hard copy too if you want it. You can see how to do that at commonlawyer.com. That's 4 volumes, but if you like to read out of the book on the paper, as I do, you can do that. So go to commonlawyer.com and check it out. Take advantage of whatever else is there too. A lot of MP3 clips, a few hundred of them, as a matter of fact. You can pull them out like sliced bread. Pick out the one you want. They're in alphabetical order according to topic. On the media page, pick out the one you want like sliced bread. And then the difference, though, is unlike sliced bread, after you devour it, you can put it back and pull it out again, listen to it again. Well, let me get to what's in the news here. What's in the news? Missouri. State Senate General Laws Committee will hold a hearing Tuesday on a bill that would establish an all-volunteer militia under the direct command of the governor. Now, I don't believe that. They say things like this. People throw words around like cordwood. Under the direct command of the governor. That's not going to happen. Our military of the United States Armed Forces is under the command of the commander-in-chief, but it's not direct. It's indirect. He deals with the officers that are in uniform, and they pass along his orders and try to achieve his ends, what he decides ought to be done. Well, that's what will happen here. The governor is not in uniform. By the way, it's a tradition of our common law tradition, a strong tradition of our common law tradition that we follow here in America, But our presidents and our governors never don military dress. They never have, and hope they never do. Even James Madison, sickly, small little man that he was, when he was president of the United States, when the British invaded Washington, D.C., when the U.S. Army met them along with the sailors that had brought their guns from the ships nearby, their artillery, tried to stop the British, when the officer in charge of the armed forces at that encounter fled in fear. Little Jimmy Madison, little Jimmy. It makes me think of little Jimmy Dickens. Ran out of the White House, left Dolly inside. She was packing up all the dishes and the silverware in case the British got to the White House, which they did. And she got a lot of the important stuff out, by the way, the paintings and whatnot. But he took command at the head of the troops. But he never did put on a military hat, and he never did put on a Well, sounds like the recording just started. I suppose that's good. I'll start mine, too.
No. It was just a momentary thing. Somebody touched it. Just continue. Okay. It'll put
well,
on for us.
The governor will not directly command the militia of Missouri if they put it in place. Is it Missouri or is it Missouri? It's Missouri. When I was there, I lived there quite a while. At the state fair, they had a tug of war, a big one. I mean, it was massive. They had a rope that was long enough that anybody that wanted to participate could participate. And whoever won the tug of war, would settle once and for all, according to official pronunciation, the way to pronounce the name of the state. It'd either be Missouri or Missouri. I don't know which one of them won. I don't remember that. I just know that people still call it Missouri that live there. So it's the militia of Missouri. The militia, it says in this article, dubbed the Minute Men by Senate Bill 528, would be able to be called into action for use in defense during a state of emergency by the governor. Now, I could have written that sentence. It'd be easier to understand. But why people, I throw this in as a freebie, why folk insist on using the passive voice, I don't know. It irks me when I see it. I do it too, but then I try to correct it. Would be able to be called into action? Why don't they just say the governor can call them into action for use in defense? Well, according to the bill, it says, any Missouri resident who can legally own a gun would be able to register for the militia within the Department of Public Safety. The identity, it says, of registered members would not be subject to disclosure or dissemination under penalty of law. Well, let's back up to the second paragraph here. First paragraph says that Tuesday there will be hearings on a bill that would establish an all-volunteer militia. Well, let's think about this for just a minute. Is there anything that the governor of the state or the legislature of the state or the courts of the state can do to establish any kind of militia in any state of the union? Can the government establish a militia? And the easy constitutional answer is absolutely not. Can the president of the United States or the Congress of the United States or the Supreme Court of the United States? Or let's say this, the president, the Congress, the Supreme Court, and then the governors of all 50 states, the legislatures of all 50 states, and the courts of all 50 states agree that they're going to establish a militia. A militia. Is that legally possible? And the answer is a resounding, loud, and confident no. Why? Because the militia is what established the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of each of the states of the United States, and through these constitutions, The militia established the governorships, the legislatures, the courts. Now, how in the world, if that's true, how in the world is it the governor or the legislature of Missouri is going to establish a militia? No, no, the militia is already there. The militia already is. The militia is the people. The people. That's what that phrase means. When you see the phrase "the people" in the there in the preamble of the Constitution of the United States, it says, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, do ordain and establish this Constitution." Who ordains and establishes it? The people. Who are the people? That's the militia. That's the militia. No, so we're wrong-headed about the militia. Why do we have problems in America? Why? Because we've lost our grip. We're not thinking straight. We see it all wrong. We have left the simplicity of the first principles of our law, even in our speech. Never, ever say, we need to establish a militia. Never, ever say, well, I'm going to join the militia. You can't join the militia. You were born into it, for crying out loud. You think I'm exaggerating? No, I'm not. Not even a little bit. If you're a male, you're born into the militia, and it's your responsibility, as able-bodied as you may be to do it, to defend the law of the land as a member of the jury, and to defend the land by force of arms if necessary, wherever that may happen. Well, could happen in your state, could happen so fast if you live on the border of the United States someplace, could happen so fast the president and the governor wouldn't even have time to do anything about it, and all you'd have time to do is to do something about it. No, I'm not exaggerating, and those things have happened in our history. Sometimes it happens so fast the president can't do anything about it. He hasn't even heard of it. That happened in the early days quite a bit. Andy Jackson was the commander of the militia of the state of Tennessee, and he got wind that the British had invaded what was called Florida with intent to invade the United States. He didn't ask questions, and he didn't take time to send a runner to Washington, D.C. That's all they had at that time. Didn't have any telegraph or telephone or tell a friend or telegossip. They didn't even have that. It worked very good. So he just mustered a militia and took off for Florida. Sent a message to the president as he left, letting him know what he was doing. What if the governor doesn't even know? Well, point is, the militia is. You can't get rid of the militia. You could jail every male member of a state, and the militia would still be there in jail. But you haven't got rid of the militia. You may have hampered them quite a bit, but you haven't got rid of them. No. All these things are possible. I remember sitting one time next to a fella at a big long table in front of a big crowd, and he was supposed to get up and say a few words, and I was supposed to get up and say a few words, and his name was Larry. Oh, I'd like to say his whole name, but I won't do it, but his name was Larry. Handsome son of a gun, but a complete lackey. Complete. He even told me so. I said, Larry, would you do this? Because he was a nice guy. And finally, he just turned around and kept bugging him. He turned around to me out in the hall one time at a meeting. He said, Brent, I'm going to lay it on the line for you. Don't take offense at this. And he had kind of a forlorn look on his face. I said, what is it, Larry? And he named the name of the governor, called him by name. And he said, that man pulls my chain. And if he doesn't pull my chain, I don't talk. And if he doesn't pull my chain to say this, that, or the t'other, I don't say it. And if he pulls my chain to say this, that, or something else, I do say it. But he pulls my chain. I'm not my own man. Okay. I didn't talk to him after that. But he was a smart man and a kind man. I wouldn't want to be in that position, but he was. I was sitting by him one time, and he happened to be second in command of the prison system of the state. Second in command, under the governor. And we were talking about prisons at that time. At that time, things had gone from when I was in high school, we all knew there were two prisons in the state, and we could tell you where they were. There were two insane asylums. We knew, everybody knew where they both were, and we'd kid each other about how we ought to be committed. So we knew that. And we knew, there, and those were state institutions. And there were two state prisons, and they were very old. Well, by the time I was talking to this fella, there were over 30 state prisons, and they'd all been built within 25 years. More than one massive state prison per year for 25 years, and it amounted to over 30, and they were still being built. And the governor that began that project, I talked to him one time at the state fair, and he said, where are you from? I told him. Very famous man. I think he's gone now. But I told him, he said, boy, he said, we poured more concrete in that county than any county in the state. What was he saying? We built a bigger prison there than any place in the state. Well, a lot of prisons there, and they were all double capacity full, even as they were building them. Now, that's just in 30 years. And I asked Larry how many men were in the prisons, he told me. And I said, wow, when's this all going to end? He said, let me tell you a secret, Brent. What is it, Larry? And I remember his very words because I've repeated them and quoted them more times than I can count in front of crowds since then. He said, if we continue at the present rate of incarceration, by the year 2032, one half of all the citizens, the inhabitants of this state, will be in prison. At the present rate, he said, of incarceration. I went silent for a minute because he may have been a lackey, but he wasn't a stupid man, and he was a kind man, and I think he'd tell the truth. And if he couldn't tell it, he'd tell you. I'm not going to tell the truth. The governor's pulling my chain. I want you to know this is a lie. I think he'd have said that. But I said to him, after a short silence, I thought he had the answer. I said, well, you're the guy in charge. What are we going to do? And he looked at me kind of funny, and he said, I don't know. You think they got the answers? No, they don't have the answers. They're just living for the moment. Friends, neighbors, and kin, ladies and gentlemen, just living for the moment. Political moment. You know, why are they letting so many hundreds of thousands of Mexicans and other nationalities across the border? I mean, they're shipping them in semi-truckloads. Why are they doing that? Because they're living for the moment. All they want support right now to keep power. And they know they don't have it in the United States. Americans aren't going to give it to them. So they got to ship people in that will. They don't care. That's how vicious and evil and self-serving it all is and always has been. Nothing new. But we've been able to keep it beaten down. Well, this whole thing about the militia being jailed, don't think they can't try to jail the whole militia. No, they could try to do that. There's enough prisons out there these days in every state. Same thing with federal prisons. We didn't have any federal prisons in America at all, except Army barracks and Navy brigs until Hoover, maybe we had one. And now we build a new one every year. There are bunches of them. Prison population, federal prisons. Well, let me get on with this. The militia, according to the bill summary, any Missouri resident who can legally own a gun, I read that part, let me read it again, would be able to register for the militia with the Department of Public Safety. Was that okay to do? Well, sure, that's okay to do. If fellas want to register and tell the sheriff or the governor's people, whoever they say by law you need to tell, the identity of registered members would not be subject to disclosure. I read that. Let me go to the next paragraph. So you're going to register it with a militia, but the law says that the government can't tell anybody that you've registered and your name is on the roll. It says any member would be required to supply their own guns, ammunition, equipment, and other supplies necessary to perform any duties as assigned by the governor. Again, the passive. I don't know why they just don't say as the governor might assign. According to the summary, any equipment designated for use in the militia would become property of the state for purposes of sovereignty and jurisdiction. Now, what in the Sam Hill does that mean, for purposes of sovereignty? Those are big words, and they have an undefined broad meaning unless they crank it down and tell you what they're talking about, which they don't do, but it sounds real fancy. I suppose that's why they say it. And they would be exempt from taxation and registration requirements. Well, that's good. Any member that would be required to supply their own guns, ammunition, equipment, and other supplies necessary, I'm quoting, supplies necessary, this is in the bill that's proposed, to perform any duties assigned by the governor. The bill summary adds that the governor would be solely in charge of the militia and would oversee organization, training, discipline, and other administrative tasks for the Minutemen. Now, I still don't believe that. The governor's going to assign these tasks. There's no way he's got time to oversee the administration. You think he's going to keep the books, make sure all that's in order? No, he's not going to do that. The bill includes language that would he might be responsible for getting it done. It says here the governor would be solely in charge. Oh, well. The bill includes language that would make it a Class E, as in echo, felony, to disclose any part of the registration list. And offenders would be subject to a $1,000 fine for each name disclosed. Why wouldn't you want people to know that you had your name on the rolls of the militia? I suppose it's okay not to tell anybody, but that's what it says. According to the summary, the state would have no liability for damages caused or any criminal act committed by a volunteer while enrolled in the Minutemen or while acting in the course of his or her duties. Now, I want to add here, as I've always done, you've heard me do it before, I've received a lot of guff for it, but I'm right, and I'm not gonna whittle down my point of view. It's criminal that men in America would sit by and watch women take their place and catch shrapnel and bullets. And it will be a part of our downfall as a nation if we continue down this course. And the more that we do those kinds of things, the more that we allow them, the more abuse of women and children there will be. And we're doing it much now, and it's getting worse exponentially and has been for a few decades. It'll continue to get worse. It breaks down society. It breaks down our country. It breaks down our government. There will be no government in America unless there's the proper government between men and women. And men are not respecting the unique attributes of the female. And that's the problem. That is the problem. Whether or not the female respects the unique attributes of the men, well, that's men would have to deal with that, but it's up to men to deal with it. Women are going to do that. They're going to show disrespect. Yeah, oh yeah, just like men do. But there needs to be a standard and shame attached to any man that would promote this kind of an idea. Let me back up here a minute. This is Senate Bill 528. It says that they would be called into action for use in defense during a state of emergency by the governor. Now, the prototype standard for this, somebody's in Missouri, please send these legislators in Missouri, one of them, if you know one, the book, Militia of the Several States. It's a booklet, Militia of the Several States, our Constitution's answer to its enemies, foreign and domestic. You can find it at commonlawyer.com, a short little booklet of about 100 pages, and in the back of that booklet is a model state militia statute. Model state militia statute. These folks here in Missouri are being pretty lawful, I guess is the way to say it, when they say, according to the bill summary, that any member that signed up, the law would require that they supply their own guns, ammunition, equipment, and supplies necessary to the duties that the governor assigns. Because if the militia, which just is, you're born into it, you're there, and when you get old enough, around 20 years old, I would say 20 would be the best age, because that's the age that God required of the militia of the 12 tribes of Israel. The militia of the 12 several tribes of Israel, analogous to the militia of the 50 several states of the United States. And if a militiaman doesn't supply his own arms, ammunition, and training, it's not the militia common law. People talk a lot and say we ought to follow the example of Switzerland. Switzerland requires every able-bodied male to be an expert marksman and to use the rifle the government provides. And when militia duty is over, it's not militia, it's not a militia, it's not a common law country, but they've done this for a long time. Before World War II, they were doing this. That's why the Nazis wouldn't invade. You know, the story goes, well, let me get back to why I mentioned Switzerland. When militia duty is over, when a man reaches a certain age, then the government gives him that military-grade weapon. But that is not the militia. The militia is where men provide their own arms. If the government provides the arms, the government controls, see? And that's not the common law militia. The common law militia is, we provide the arms and ammunition and the training according as the law tells us. A state legislature here ought to say, well, this is the military grade weapon you got to have. And this is how many rounds of ammunition you got to have. And this is the safety and marksmanship training you have to obtain. And give them a list of, the governor or the state legislature ought to give them a list of marksmanship safety training courses. There are many now that are very good, that would suffice to meet the requirements of that state statute, complete that course. That would be a good thing. Well, the story is with Switzerland, however, there are good things about Switzerland's system of self-defense. And the story goes that the general officer in charge of the, I don't want to call it the militia, but it's like a militia, but it's not, but the armed forces of Switzerland, met with the general officer of the army of the Nazis, and the army of the Nazis said, we're going to invade. And the Swiss general said, well, you can try to do that. They had a meeting to try to discuss what could be done, but he said, my men are excellent marksmen, and I have 250,000 of them. And the German general said, but I have 500,000 highly disciplined troops. And the Nazis were highly disciplined and good soldiers. Now, they killed far more of us than we killed of them. They lost the war, but they were killers, and they didn't hesitate. The Americans didn't do that as well. But he said, I have 250,000, said the Swiss man, and the general officer, and the Nazi general officers, he has said, yes, but I have 500,000. And the Swiss general officer then said, well, I'll just have each of my 250,000 men fire two rounds, and we'll turn around and go home. And that was his answer. Well, the Nazis didn't invade. They just stayed away, which just goes to show what Colonel Cooper used to say. And what was it that Colonel Cooper said? Oh, yes. Famous quote. He said, an armed society is a polite society. Now, Cooper ran the only, at that time, the only reputable firearms safety and marksmanship school in America. And there were others, but this one was truly top drawer, top drawer. And the lawyer that I worked for back in those days was counsel. The name of the place was Gunsight. It was outside of, just north of Phoenix, Arizona, up north of Scottsdale, up in there, if I remember right. But the lawyer I worked for was general counsel to him. And I didn't know much about him. But about that time, then a Korean fella, I don't know whether he was an immigrant or whether he grew up here, but he bought the place. Now, I understand it's still a very good marksmanship school, but there are others now, many others. It's gotten more popular. Back then, people didn't think about getting personal training. But a true militia statute and the model state militia statute in the back of that booklet I was telling you about has this requirement in that model state militia statute. The name of the book is The Militia of the Several States. It's a unpacking of the four militia clauses. That's what I try to do there, the four militia clauses of the United States Constitution. The fourth militia clause is the Second Amendment, very well known. But there are three others. They're ignored entirely and have been for, well, I'm pushing two centuries now. James Madison wrote, after about 39 years after the militia of the several states, the people ratified the Constitution, and he wrote that his great fear, in his commentaries on the Constitution, he wrote that his great fear was that these clauses, these militia clauses, that men would ignore them, and in doing so, by ignoring them, we as Americans would forfeit not only the politium, but the reality of our freedoms. That's an old word. It means the badge of our freedoms. The reality of it is we got guns. The badge of it is that we carry guns. That's the badge of our freedom as men that are living out what we used to call freemanship. Freemanship. Not citizenry. No, no. Freemanship. Our first fathers, our first forebears in America didn't talk about citizenship. That's a law of the city idea. The word crept into our Constitution for convenience sake. But we are not properly in a common law country. We're not citizens. We have not been initiated into the mysteries of some city religion. The law of the city. No, that's not us. I don't want that. No, I want to live in freemanship. And being armed is the badge, and the arms are to be used in defense of the land. That's the badge of our freedom. That's the reality of our freedom. And that's what they're talking about here in Missouri. This is a good sign. This is not a bad sign. I can parse what's happening here and criticize them. That's easy to do, and you can do that with me real easy, I'm sure. Roast Brent when he gets off. But this is commendable, what Missouri is talking about doing. And the most commendable part of it is that, I'll read it, any Missouri resident, any member of this militia would be required to supply their own guns, ammunition, equipment, and other supplies. Well, this is Brent, Alan Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com, coming to you and at you from the hinterlands of the Wabash River Valley. Oh, I want to add this too. My comments are my own. And The leadership at the National Liberty Alliance, as always, is kind enough to let me say a few words. They may or may not agree with what I say, but again, they allow me to say a few things. I'm going to ask Terry if Gerard and John are here.
I was just looking for them.
What if they aren't? We'll keep going.
Stand by. Give me just a second.
We're all sing a tune or a whistle or something.
Nope. Nobody's here.
Oh, okay.
Dan, you mind if Brent presses on?
Not that I need to. I'm just saying that if I'm needed.
Well, we appreciate the help, sir.
Yeah. I think that would be an excellent idea, Brent.
Well, all right, then we'll do that.
Do we have any questions that
yeah, we can do that.
Are slanted directly to Brent, Jan?
Not that I have noticed in the list. Let me pull it up quick. Well, here's one that you might like, Brent. It's from one of our district leaders. And it gives a link to an article that's about the Senate to debate bill for creation of volunteer militia. It covers the Missouri State Bill 528, which they, as in the Missouri Senate, are calling it the Minuteman Bill, that generalized the militia, in which also governs that if they have firearms while federalized by the state and federal government, the firearms belong to the government, not to the law-abiding militia. Could you shed some light on that topic, Brent? I think you're ideally suited to answer that.
I think I understand the way I'm hearing it. Correct me if I don't get this right.
Okay.
The government's saying that they're going to take ownership of any firearms that militiamen have that use in militia drill. Is that the idea?
If they're federalized by the state and or federal government, the firearms belong to the government for this Missouri Senate Bill 528. Not to the law-abiding militia.
Oh, yeah, that's a bad idea. However, absolutely. Once a militiaman is mustered, and the militiaman can be mustered, either the President of the United States can muster the militiaman, or the governor of the state wherein he lives. And whoever does the mustering first has control of the militiaman. That's the unwritten rule of our common law, and the unwritten rule of our Constitution. By principle, our common law, of course, our common law existed before the Constitution, and the Constitution is a brief of common law government. But whoever musters them first has control of them. But once a militiaman is mustered, if it worked ideally the way our common law tradition has done it in the past, even before men had firearms and only had pikes and lances and swords, still the weapons were the individuals. And that's what made the militia functional as a freedom-keeping institution. If the firearms belong to the government, then the government controls the firearms. You go by, for instance, a National Guard training center. Oh, there'll be an armory, they call them. That's what we used to call them. I don't know what you call them now, an armory. You'll see military trucks, half tracks, maybe a piece of artillery. You go inside, there'll be M16s. It used to be M14s, now it's M16s. Maybe they've got a new one now. Then they went to the M16A1. Whatever they got, they'll have M60, machine guns, 50 caliber, they'll have hand grenades, and all of those arms belong to the government. And the government, because they control the arms and the equipment, they control the militiamen. Not the militiamen, the National Guardsmen. The militiaman's different. The militiaman produces his own firearm at his own expense. Now, once he's mustered, let's say the governor musters the militiaman, And he shows up with the military-grade weapon that the state legislature says he's required to have by the time he's 20 years old, and the safety course, a certificate that he's required to produce by the time he's 22 or something, whatever the statute says, and X number of rounds of ammunition that fit that particular firearm that the state legislature says he has to have, he shows up. Now, before he musters, he's not under military law. As soon as he musters, that means he says here, when they call his name, I don't care whether he's standing in formation or laying down drunk on the deck, he's under military law at that point. What does that mean? That means that although the government does not have ownership of his firearm and his ammunition, the government has absolute control of his firearm and his ammunition. There's a difference. You know, there's a difference between possession and title to property. Possession and title. A custodian, we used to have custodians in the high school where I went, and we called them custodians because they had possession and control of equipment and of the building. But they didn't own the building. They didn't have title to it. They were custodians. And that's the way it is also with your firearm. The government has control of your firearm. The government, if once you're mustered in, has control of your body. The government tell you to go here, go there. You're under military law. And under military law, if you don't obey a lawful order, it's easy to remember what the Uniform Code of Military Justice says. If in time of war you don't obey a lawful order, the penalty is death, or as a court martial may require. So easy to remember. Doesn't make a difference what you're told to do. Take your gun and shoot the enemy. Yeah. You don't do that? What's the penalty? Death, or as a court martial may require. Pick up your gun and run over there, and you disobey. Death, or as a court martial may require. I know I'm generalizing quite a bit, but that's really what it comes down to if it's in time of war. Now, if it's not in time of war, and you're called for another purpose, that wouldn't be the applicable law. But listen, if the President of the United States calls up the militia, there's a very good chance it's going to be for armed defense of the land. Again, ownership, which is legal title, we call it, remains in the owner of the firearm. But once you're mustered, the government has absolute control of what you do with that firearm, what you do with your body. That's the nature of martial law, confined to its proper use. Armed men on fields of battle. Well, that's the way I would understand it, for what it's worth. Is there a follow-up question to that? Did I hit the nail with my head and answer the question in a satisfactory way?
Yes, you did a very satisfactory job.
Oh, good.
This always brings up the next question. Because you mentioned that one must muster as a militiaman with a military-grade weapon. These are unavailable to the general public. What do you do in that case?
Well, the state legislature in this case, for instance, let's go read what they're saying here. It says, they were pretty good what they said. Be required to supply their own guns, ammunition, I guess, and other supplies necessary. I guess they don't go into much detail, but it's a complete defense. Let's say the state legislature says you got to have an M16, a fully functional M16 A1 that fires a 3-round burst every time you pull the trigger. You know, the old M16, you pull the trigger and it would keep firing until you let go of the trigger. And In Southeast Asia, they found that the soldiers would pull the trigger. If they were scared and saw somebody they wanted to shoot, they'd pull the trigger, but they'd be scared enough, they would, and their blood would be high enough, they wouldn't let go of the trigger, and they'd blow out all their ammunition, and then somebody'd shoot them. So they configured the gun so they would fire a burst of only 3 bullets every time they pulled the trigger. That way, they wouldn't expend all their ammunition. They'd have another burst in case they needed to turn around and fire at something else. Well, let's say that the state legislature says you got to have a weapon that M16A1 fires 3 bursts per trigger pull, and then you got to have 500 rounds of NATO. Well, whatever. I shouldn't say that. NATO is kind of out now, or persona non grata anyway. A certain grade of ammunition. If you can't get that grade of ammunition, it's not available, that's a defense. Because what would happen? Defense to a crime. If the state legislature says every able-bodied man 20 years old and upward, age 45, has to have this weapon within 1 year, and it's not available to get, well, in our law, at our common law, that's a complete defense to the any possibility of them charging you with a crime. But I would say also, probably, the state legislature will see to it that the weapons that are needed will be available in the state. Now, maybe the state, who knows, maybe the state would say, we're going to get the weapons, and you buy them from us. Maybe that's the way they'd do it. I don't know. I'm looking here at the state militia statute. Do I have it here? I thought I did. I wanted to read the parts of it. Calling out and mustering into actual service. This is in the book, Militia of the Several States, Our Constitution's Answer to Its Enemies, Foreign and Domestic. In the back, there's this model state militia statute. Organization, qualification of militiamen and officers. In no event shall any man be eligible to serve as a militiaman or as a militia officer of this state, who holds citizenship of any other country other than the United States, or any state of the United States, owes or otherwise bears allegiance to any other sovereign on earth besides the Constitution of this state and the Constitution of the United States. He takes an oath, which is the same oath. What's the oath our Constitution requires of all of our military armed forces? Begins, says, the militia of this state includes all males between the age of 20 and 45, dwelling within its boundaries, having an intent to dwell within this state for the indefinite future, that's domicile, and able-bodied to carry and fire the weapon this state's legislature designates. The militia of this state, well, let's see, militia duty of this state shall remain mandatory. I was looking here for what firearm. I guess it's explicit. No, here it is, number 7, paragraph 7 of this model state militia statute. Each militiaman, upon having been sworn into the state's militia, shall, within 1 year, purchase, at his own expense, or otherwise lawfully acquire, somebody could give it to him, he could inherit it, otherwise lawfully acquire the weapon and 500 rounds of ammunition this state's legislature has specified, and within 2 years of enrollment shall provide proof that he has, at his own expense, disciplined himself to safe handling of, care of, and marksmanship with said firearm, which meets this state's legislature's standards. Any federal law, regulation, executive order, act, or action infringing upon the right of any individual of this state to keep and bear arms, or upon any other constitutional duty, you see, keeping and carrying a loaded weapon is a constitutional duty. Now, a few years ago, 3, 4, or 5 years ago, I do these Monday night calls, and I made the point that a right, the word right, means duty. The word right means duty. We have, in our popular culture, hackneyed that word, morphed it, hijacked it, until it means something selfish. My rights. You can't. These are my rights. Well, rights are duties, and the word itself means duty. It's not that every right is accompanied by a corresponding duty. How have you heard that? Every right is accompanied by a corresponding duty. Well, that's not really true. Strictly true is that every right is a duty, period. It's not one and the other. No. If you have a right, that right is a duty. Don't separate those in your mind. The right to keep and bear arms, that's the duty. Doesn't the militia have a duty to defend himself, his family, his neighbors, his state, his country? Doesn't he have a duty to be available to the sheriff as a subset, the posse of the county, a subset, the militia of his state? Does he have a duty to respond? You better believe it. Go read the law. When the sheriff says, grab this and grab your hay fork and show up if that's all you got, and you don't do it, you can be prosecuted and the jury could send you to jail. That's a crime. What's sad is we've forgotten that, and we have this mindset now. Sick. It's a badge of the sickness of the mindset we have as Americans. We want somebody else to protect us. We want the police force to protect us. We want the governor and his deputies, or the governor, the sheriff and the deputies, protect us. We want the governor to protect us. We want the president to protect us. Whoever is your protector, watch me. Watch me close. Whoever is your protector is your master. Whoever is your protector is your master. Who do you want? Who do you want for a master? You want the Chinese to protect you? You want NATO to protect you? Europe has been mastered by the United States since World War II. We are their masters. They do our bidding. They always have. Why? Because we've been their protectors. Our presence is there. Who's been the masters of the Japanese people? We have. Why? Because we're their protectors. After the war, we said you can only have this much in your military budget. We'll protect you. Don't worry about it. The South Sea Islanders, who's their protectors? We are. We are their masters. Who's the protectors of the British protectorates around the world? Belize, Canada. The Queen is the protector. She is their master. That's not who America set out to be, and that's not who we've been. No, our whole idea here was that we govern our own business and we protect ourselves. What's happened to us? What are we thinking? It is a duty. That's what a right is. The militia at common law, in the old days, the fundamental first principles of it haven't changed. I'm talking about olden days before there were firearms, back in the old country, back on the island of Britain. Back then, they spoke a tongue called Anglo-Saxon. They didn't call it English back then. They called it Anglo-Dane. They did call it that because the Danes took over the island and mixed up with the Anglo-Saxons. They had a like Germanic tongue, and they called their militia the Furdfeare. Furdfeare, that means the militia, a goan, fair. Fair means welfare, wayfare, that means a goan in old Anglo-Saxon. And the militia goan, they called their law, this is even more significant, what we call our common law, that's relatively new. It was called the law of the land during the days of Magna Carta, that phrase we have in our Constitution. But before that, the Anglo-Saxons and the Danes called their common law, they never heard the word common law, they called it the Volkrecht. The Volkrecht. Volk means, we say folk, F-O-L-K, then we now say people, it's all the same, people, folk, Volk. Remember the Volkswagen? The Volkswagen was the people's wagon, the Volkswagen, the people's wagon. That's in German. It's a Germanic tongue. The Volkrecht was and is the people's duty, right. They didn't say it the way we said it exactly. They said right. Same word. It means the people's duty. Well, what's the people's duty? The Volkrecht. Our law is the people's duty, and it had two parts. Two. two duties. That's it. The only two duties of government that are really valid. Number one, defense of the land. Number two, defense of the law of the land. That's the way they saw it. And every male had a duty to defend the land and to defend the law of the land. Well, we know how they defended the land. They did that by force of arms. Every male member was to provide weapons and be ready to defend the land. Well, how do you defend the law of the land? Well, they did it. They're common law country, common law people. So even way back then, they had the jury. Nobody else has the jury, just us common law country folk. They had the jury, and the way you defend the law of the land is to be willing to serve on the jury. So every militiaman had two duties, jury duty and armed defense. Armed defense was defense of the land. And when you defend the land, you defend the law of the land law. And every militiaman also had a duty to serve on the jury, to defend the law of the land. But when you defend the law of the land, you defend the land. Beautiful system. And that's the one we've inherited, and that's what our Constitution has put in place, just a reestablishment of that old system that we've always had. Nothing new, but now we've forgotten it. And that's what Justice Story said he feared the most. Because to forget and ignore that we must defend ourselves personally, each community must defend itself, each county, each state must defend itself, or be mastered by someone else who defends you, or claims to. You know what it'll come down to in that kind of a case. I was just thinking this morning, yesterday, the day before. In America, big business controlled America 140 years ago. The railroads controlled America. They had more money than anybody else, and then other big concerns, but the railroads were really big, the steel business, all of those things, but the railroads primarily led the charge. They controlled America. Was that bad? No, it could have been a lot worse. That was the private sector. That wasn't government controlling America. That's right. When we went into World War I, Woody Wilson had to go to the railroads with his hat in his hand and ask them, please, will you support me if I ask for a declaration of war? And if they'd have said no, he wouldn't have done it. Well, then we had a great influx of Irish immigrants and Italian immigrants. And it wasn't long till they realized that they were being put upon and people didn't accept them and they were going to have to look out for themselves. So what did they do? They organized. They organized into a system, each of them, that would allow them to be loyal to one another and take care of themselves. And it came to be called the Cosa Nostra and then the Mafia. Started back in an overt way in the 1920s. And they had their little system going, which is a pretty big system, frankly. And the railroads had their system going, but the railroads began to wane as unionization came in. Well, as unionization came in, then the mob began to control the unions, and that took power away from the railroads. So the railroads' power was waning. The mob was getting stronger. And things were still going along pretty good because the government was still on the outside. They didn't have all the power. And then finally, Rudy Giuliani is the most visible creature in this. There were other men. They decided back during the days of Kennedy to go after the mob. See, that's what that was. That was the Irish mob going after the Italian mob. They went after him. Remember Bobby Kennedy? The mob put John Kennedy into office. Then he turned on them. And his attorney general, fresh out of law school, hadn't have a clue what he was doing, 25 years old. He decided to go after the mob. Next thing we know, John Kennedy's dead, and the mob keeps going. And they controlled a lot. They controlled the cities. They controlled the unions. But America was still pretty prosperous. Why? Because all that criminal power wasn't in government. That's why. Las Vegas was a safe place to live and work when the mob controlled Las Vegas. I'm just giving you the facts of history. And then Rudy Giuliani, they went after the mob. He was one of the prosecutors, and they shut the mob down. The last vestige of it was John Gotti. He went to prison in about 1985, and there he died at Marion Correctional High Security. high security prison, the one that took the place of Alcatraz in Marion, Illinois. He died there. Well, there was a void now. Who controls crime? I'll tell you who controls crime in America. I think it's abundantly apparent at this point. It's been a progression, hasn't it? Starting with the railroads, then the Irish crime groups, and then the Italian crime groups. And then the U.S. government got jealous, wanted to shut all that down, took all that power away, and now the government is the criminal organization in America. No question. I think it's clear as crystal. I had a friend once tell me not long ago, he said, Brent, boy, I sure am glad they finally got crime off the streets and back in the government where we can watch it. And that's what we're watching. It's not, again, organized crime. They took care of themselves and they killed each other, but the United States government doesn't have that limit. They're out to control everything. It's better when control is in private hands, as ugly as it can be. It doesn't hold a candle to the ugliness of a monopoly of power in government that controls everything. People complained about the railroads and people complained about other people having power, but now the void is being filled. That seems to be the progression of history for the last 140 years. So what do we do about it? There's always a remedy. Always a remedy. Always is, always has been, always will be. What is it? It's true law. True law is the only remedy for lawlessness. I love law. Do you like law? Do you like what's true and good? Do you deep down in your socks, way down at the bottom of your being, do you really want what's right? Even though you know you fail, you know your friends fail, you can't understand why people hate you, then you catch yourself hating people you hadn't ought to hate. And we all make mistakes, we all do stupid things, but deep down inside, do you really want what's right? Do you, as Jesus Christ said, do you hunger and thirst after righteousness? Do you really? Blessed, he says, is the man who hungers and thirsts. Why does he hunger and thirst? Because he doesn't have it. That's why. When you want a drink of water, it's because you need one. You don't have enough. Why would you hunger and thirst after righteousness? Because you don't have enough. And you're looking around you and you don't see it. And you're tired of the evil and the chaos. What's the remedy? Well, blessed is he who hungers and thirsts after what's right. What is righteousness? You know, the old word was right-headedness. And then in English, the word Reich, remember, it's a Germanic word, Reich. Remember the Volkreich, the common law, the people's duty? Well, righteousness is a word that developed in our Anglo-Dane tradition. And the word wasn't righteousness. That word was invented in the 16th century. Before that, they didn't say righteousness. They said right wiseness, W-I-S-E. Well, what does wise mean? Well, if I say clockwise, we still use the suffix to the words. Clockwise means the hands go in a certain direction. If it's counterclockwise, they go in the other direction. Wise is a word that denotes manner or direction or way you do something, how you do something. So righteousness was how they did something. But they call it right wiseness. It meant, which course are you on? Are you on the right course? Are you headed the right direction? Well, William Tyndale came along. He was from the Cotswold Scarp in England. That's over against the border of Wales over there. And he got the bright idea he was going to translate the Bible into English from the original tongues. And he looked at that word in Hebrew, tzaddik, and that word in Greek, Decay, Sadiq. And he said, this word right-wiseness is kind of long. I think I'll streamline it. He coined a new way to say it, righteousness. What does it mean? It means right-headedness. That's what it means. It means you got your nose pointed in the right direction and you're going the right way. You're on the right road. Don't let anybody dissuade you from it. You hunger and thirst after righteousness? You're on the road? Keep on the road. Oh, you'll be distracted. You'll take a frolic off the main road and get in trouble. Just come back as soon as you can. And I don't care what's in front of you. Keep going. Stay on the narrow. True law is to be on. Our common law is, of course, a way of life. Stay on it. Well, the way we do our militia is important to that. Just those two duties is all we need to concentrate on. Listen, make government simple. You know, I listen to all these common law experts out here, and they talk about all the detail, and they parse all the statutes, and that pretty soon I'm just tired. And I'm a lawyer. It's not that you get used to that. No, after a while you get tired of it. I'm tired of all that detail. I want simplicity, and I'm trying to give you simplicity. We want our country to turn around, and we want our land to not be polluted with unrighteousness. People with their noses going in the wrong direction. Try to talk to some of these folk, these left-wing wackos. Try to talk to these Democrats. It ought to be a crime to be a Democrat today. It's bad enough being a Republican. Nothing really good there either, I don't suppose. But try to talk to them. You're wasting your time. Why? Because they're looking the opposite direction you are while they're talking to you. It's not that you're talking past each other. You're not even talking toward each other. They got their nose going in another direction. You got your nose going in this direction. There's just millions of them coming this way, and you're going against them. There's no sense talking at this point. Talking's over. We saw what happened. We made logical, lawful arguments of decency and law, and they all said, we don't care. I heard a lady say not long ago, screaming, a young woman, because they said, well, abortion is killing children. And she said, with the viciousness of a demon, I want to kill my babies. Now, that's the attitude out there. Oh, they love blood. These people are dangerous, out of control, vicious, brainless, as brute beasts, like Peter the Apostle says. Get out of their way. Get your nose pointed the right direction. How do you know what righteousness is? Well, there are only two duties. Let's make it simple. Two duties of government. Two duties. These are rights. These are duties. Armed defense and jury duty. Is there anything else? Armed defense and jury duty. If we have that, everything else will take care of itself if we do good with that. Know your duties as a juryman. Know your power. Know what you can do. Go to commonlawyer.com, the website, commonlawyer.com. Get the book called The Jury, a booklet describing your power and your duty, what you're supposed to do as a grand juror and as a juror. Get the booklet, The Militia of the Several States. Read it. Just read through it. I tried to make it interesting. You can do that. Interesting? No, just fun to read. Read it. Think about it. If you get it into mental sod, it may come out in your actions. Matter of fact, it will. Garbage in, garbage out, as they say with the computers. Same thing with your brain. Whatever you put in is going to come out in your hands and feet and your tongue. From the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, the Bible says. Oh, it's right. Whatever you put in, that's what you're going to say and do. Put the right stuff in. Don't be watching fluffhead stupidity on the television. Get away from it. Get away from the news. There's nothing there. Fox News isn't going to tell you the truth. That's been proven. CNN is certainly not going to tell you the truth. Neither one of them are. Oh, you want to watch Hannity? Hannity, is that his name? Or the other fellow, Tucker Carlson? Oh, but Tucker does a good job. Forget it. Those fellows are making millions of dollars, and they ain't going to do nothing that's going to put their jobs in jeopardy. And the same man for years, I don't know if it's still true, the same man that owned Fox News owned CNN. They just like to keep a fight going, controlled opposition. You've heard about it. Get away from it. The answer to the problem in America is not us being interested in what's going on in Washington, D.C. and the State House as much as it is what's going on in your house right now. What are you trying to learn? What are you trying to do? Put the right stuff in. You may get it out. Jury duty, defense of the law of the land. Armed defense, this is a militiaman's duty. Defense of the land itself. To do one is to do the other. So the oath of every militiaman is the same. And it supports those two duties. You heard it. Let me read it here. I've got it in this model state militia statute. I put the oath in here that I think every militiaman and every officer, non-officer, enrolled in the militia should take. Here it is. This is required. Our Constitution requires it. I will support and defend the Constitution of this state and of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and upon being duly called and mustered into actual service of this state, will obey all lawful orders, not all orders, or all lawful orders of the governor of this state and of the officers placed over me, and upon being duly called and mustered into actual service of the United States, will obey all lawful orders of the President of the United States and of the officers placed over me. Well, you see there, support and defend the Constitution of the United States and of the state against what? All enemies, two kinds, foreign and domestic. Foreign enemies are the ones you take up arms against. That's the first duty. Domestic enemies are the ones we impanel the jury to deal with. That's why we have those two elements in our oath. This oath, the founders of our country did not invent this oath to defend our Constitution, which is the law of the land, right? Defend the law of the land, it says, against all, Article 6 of our Constitution says that, law of the land. Defend it against all enemies, foreign, that's willingness to take up arms, and domestic. That's willingness to serve on the jury. There it is, friends, neighbors, and kin. The two duties of government are the two duties of the militia, the two duties of the militiamen. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. I can say it again. Thanks for letting me say a few words, and I'm going to ask Terry. Terry's always standing by, ever faithful. If John and Gerard are back.
No, I wish they were, but no, they're not here yet.
Well, I just noticed, and I won't say her last name, but Anne just joined the meeting. I won't say where she's from. I just noticed she joined, and I've been meaning to call her. I say that so she'll know. There was something I wanted to ask her, not in any hurry, nothing pressing, but good to see her.
She's still logging on, so she won't hear you until it gets past 30 seconds.
Oh, I see.
And then you're going to unmute her if you want to talk to her.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just wait then. Well, then, neither one of them showed up, and neither one of them have given you any indication they're going to show up. Is that what's happening so far?
That's what I have. Jan, do you have something different?
Nope, I haven't anything after that. We do have another question or two that might be on the militia that might be pertinent if you're interested, Brent.
Well, go ahead.
Okay. If SCOTUS throws out obvious election fraud cases, what are we to do as a nation, i.e., is there any alternative to a militia response?
Well, sure there is. Of course, there are other remedies. That's our common law government. Our common law government gives us other remedies. Our common law government divides power. Our common law government doesn't put any of the three branches of government in the trumping position. Our common law government is a constant, perpetual Mexican standoff. Do you remember? No, some of you probably wouldn't. Those of you who would, remember the Mexican standoff. And probably the most pronounced and well-known representation of it was the movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's a Christian analogy. The book is a Christian, the book was written, a Christian analogy. The movie didn't say that. It was Clint Eastwood. But there was a good man. He was referred to as the angel. There was the bad man. He was the demon. And then there was the ugly man who was just ugly. He was desperate. He was desperado. And that's most of us at most times. We're not obviously good men. You say, Brent, oh, no, some people are. No, no, no. Jesus Christ said there is none good. None good but God. All the rest of us are tainted to various degrees. But in the movie, at the very end, there was $600,000 in gold at stake. And the whole movie is about trying to find that $600,000 in gold. And finally, Clint Eastwood played the part of the good man, the good, they called him. And he finally discovered that it was in the grave, they thought, of a fellow named Carson in a large, large graveyard out in the middle of nowhere. In the middle of this graveyard was a paved area of cobblestone, large. And Clint said, Clint, or whatever his name was in the movie, he said, I'm going to write anybody that gets this $600,000, and the other two fellows were there, the bad and the ugly, he said, I'm going to write it on the bottom of this rock I got in my hand in chalk, and he laid it in the middle of that big round paved area with cobblestones, and they slowly backed up to the edges, watching each other, and it was a three-way gunfight to see who would get the $600,000. That's a Mexican standoff. Of course, there was a lot of intensity that was built up as the camera would pan to their individual close-up to their eyes as they glanced back and forth at each other, and their hands would be twitching and thinking about who they're going to shoot first. Well, that's our United States government. The three branches of government, that's a common law government. The three branches of government are in constant perpetual tension. And each branch is, our common law tradition requires that each branch and every person in it do what they believe to be lawful, regardless of what the other branches do. So if the Supreme Court says, no, we're not going to do this, we're not going to hear it, we're not even going to hear the case. In other words, what the Supreme Court said was, we're not going to do our job. We're not going to give your opinion about who's right and wrong here. That's all the Supreme Court can do, is give you their opinion. They don't control armies or have a lot of power to force anybody to do anything except on an individual level. They can enjoin people individually. Let's say the Supreme Court, and they said, well, we're not even going to hear the case. Well, what does that leave us? That leaves us the Congress and the executive branch. Are they going to do anything? Well, obviously, the executive branch, Joe Biden, didn't do anything. Trump did what he could, but then his time was up. So now we've got the executive branch has not done its job respecting, ensuring lawful elections for president in the United States. The Supreme Court has punted. They said, we don't want to touch it. You guys, we're not going to do our job. We're going to tell you whether it was lawful or unlawful. What does that leave you? Well, that leaves the Congress of the United States. That's what it leaves. I'll tell you, it leaves other things, too. It leaves the Congress of the United States. It leaves the governors of the states, the legislatures of the states. There's 150 institutions right there. And they add another 50, the courts of the states. That's another 200 plus the Congress. That's a lot of people. And then there's you. What are you going to do? Are you going to do what's right? Are you going to tolerate this? See, this is our common law tradition. That's not true in Europe. They don't even think that way in Southeast Asia and the communist countries. They just say, well, we got to do what the government says. And if the man in charge or the legislature in charge, we're ruled by a single will, there's nothing we can do. Well, in America, it's not that way. Not only are we not ruled by a single will in the national level, we're not ruled by a single will in the 50 state levels. We've got some serious division of power going on here in America. Don't worry about the country going down because Joe Biden's a bozo or mentally retarded or has Alzheimer's. Whatever it is, I don't know. He's obviously mentally deficient. He wanted to be president. He's a target of criticism now, and a big one. I say the man's somehow mentally deficient. There's something wrong. Well, he's on drugs or he's sick in the head. Of course, the Bible says God has abandoned his brain. The test is right there. You can read it. You can go read it if you want to. Romans chapter 1. And a lot of other folk in government fall into that category. But in America, who is master here ultimately? The militia of the several states. Secondly, the militia of the several states, but secondly, who is final? If the three branches of the government aren't final, do not have the final word in America, as a practical matter, who does have the final word? Here it is. I'm going to give you the answer. Down here on land, I'm not including the maker of all things in this answer, but down here on land, the jury has the final say. The jury, in individual instances, right? The jury only decides things in individual instances. And the jury decides right from wrong in individual instances from whose decision there is no appeal. Our Constitution even says that about the federal courts. Well, that's godhood. You mean the jury The unanimous jury makes the final decision in individual instances of right and wrong, and there is no appeal down here on land. Yeah, that's right. Down here on land, that's true. And that's the manifestation. See, one of the duties of the militia is to do what? Serve on the jury. Remember, there are only two duties of the militia, and there are only two fundamental duties of government. Armed defense, to defend the land, and serving on the jury to defend the law of the land, and to do the one is to do the other. Let's say all these militiamen out here, have they taken this oath? The answer is no, they haven't taken this oath. Well then, how do you say they have a duty to do these things? Because they were born into it. Remember, as we like to keep saying, the oath does not give to a man a new duty. This oath does not give any new duty at all. Then what does it do? It just further binds a man to a duty he already has. By the time you take an oath, you're just further binding yourself to a duty. You're married? Let's say you've been living together for years, or maybe months, but you haven't taken an oath. You haven't taken the vow, to be more accurate. The vows of marriage. Do the vows create a new duty? No, they don't. They just strengthen even stronger a duty you already had, and every American has a duty. Duty to be supportive of our defending our land, but the militiaman has the duty to actively take up arms, if need be, and to serve on the jury. That's the duty of the militiaman. Well, I hope I again hit the nail with my head. Was there another question, if John and Gerard aren't back? Is there another question?
Well, I think we're going to take a little commercial break here. Terry has volunteered to come up with some stuff.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Oh, I'm all right.
Cool. I've been listening for a while. I just called about again. Just curious about, I was speaking to a gentleman last week. I was speaking about birth certificates and attaching it to an affidavit, and the gentleman said that that's the wrong certificate. You need a certificate of live birth. And I went back to my hospital to look on their website. It just took me to the county's website where I purchased the birth certificates, which in my mind's eye is considered a bond. I was wondering if you all could shed a little light on that for me, please.
Well, should I speak, or did somebody else want to?
No, go for it. I don't know how to address that one.
Yeah, let me get straight to the point. Don't let a piece of paper govern your life. Don't let a goofy piece of paper govern your life, especially if it's an inconsequential thing. A birth certificate doesn't make you born any more than a marriage certificate makes a man or a woman married. That's just a piece of evidence. A piece of paper is not going to change anything that the evil empire has tried to do to you. No, how many pieces of paper do we need? We got the Constitution. That's a piece of paper. Is that doing us any good? No, it's not doing us any good. How many Bibles, if people aren't going to follow it, how many Bibles do we have in America? More than any other people on the face of the planet. How many people can even recite the 66 books of the Bible in order? You'd have a hard time in 14 counties finding a preacher or a clergyman that could do that. What good does it do? What good do pieces of paper do? I was talking to Matt Truella here a few years ago, and we were just discussing. He travels around and he's trying to help people get legislation passed. But he read an article about somebody they were going to do this or do that in government. He said all they're going to do is file another piece of paper. I'm tired of pieces of paper. Pieces of paper, when George Bush said that it's just another Constitution, just another GD piece of paper. Was he right? Well, yeah, pretty much. That's what it is, just a piece of paper. Is it going to stop government from doing anything? No, it's not going to stop government from doing anything. You're talking about a birth certificate. You can't, if your birth certificate is filed at the county courthouse, how are you going to stop people from taking it and using it for an unlawful purpose? You're not going to do it. It's not even possible. And there are plenty of self-serving people in government that would have access to it, and they would do that. So what we need to do, and I'm going to bring up another subject that you can find on the website, we need to start keeping our own records of live birth. of death, of marriage, and of land transfer. Those are the fundamental property rights in our country. And if you go to commonlawyer.com, go to the website and look there and find under the media button or the books button, the Family Bible. The Family Bible. Because if you get the Family Bible according to our common law tradition, according to the statutes, it's even been codified in statute, if you record those things in a Family Bible, it's evidence that creates the presumption of truth. All presumptions, of course, everything in the law is overcomable, but if you've got those records in a Bible, I don't care what they do at the State House. I don't care what they do at the courthouse. If you've got them in a Bible, you've got good evidence of them, time, place, witnesses, you can get that, but they've got to be bound, according to most of the state statutes, they've got to be bound in binding in a Family Bible. And you can get a Family Bible there that has places where you can fill that out and do that. And then whatever the evil empire does, the evil empire does. They do what they do. The remedy to our problem is not to go and try to beat them up. Our problem is us, as they have said. As they have said, we have met the enemy and he is us. We're not doing right. That's the problem. Screaming about government's not going to get us anywhere. These people are scum. You may as well be screaming at pigs. I've screamed at plenty of pigs. I know they don't listen that well.
And you pigs fly now like a helicopter.
Yeah. But if there's a piece of paper out there that people can use to prostitute you, they're going to be doing it. I mentioned the other day, when I was in high school, some kid would come around from the principal's office and never go to every classroom. It was a little tiny high school, but he'd go to all the classrooms, and the teacher was supposed to ask everybody there who was going to go to lunch down the cafeteria they had set up down there. And I thought that was for the cooks, and I knew two of the cooks. I went to church with them. They were, and I knew their children, same age as me. They were nice people. But all that was prostituting all of us children for state money that they could get. That was federal money, too, even at that time, coming to the states to get more money to the states to hire more people. They would buy some food with it, but then they would pocket the rest and use it for other things. Well, that's prostituting children. To use me as a child, as a kid growing up, to get money, just counting me. Well, that's what you're saying they're doing with your birth certificate. They're taking it and they're saying, okay, I got this birth certificate, and I can traffic it, and I can sell it. Don't even worry about it. You just take care of your business. Make sure that you push your state legislature to pass a state militia statute. That's the way to do it. The way to do it is for you to take up your duties as a militiaman. And your rights, what we call rights, are duties. And to do it lawfully, according to the law, do it carefully, do it sure-footedly and slowly, go to your sheriff, and say, I'm here. I want to be on the rolls for the posse right here in this county. That's a subset of the militia. And the sheriff has that duty to catalog men, and they're not doing that either. Some sheriffs are around the country. I've talked to men that have done that here recently, and it's getting to be more prevalent, and I'm glad. Well, that'd be my suggestion, because I've looked at that for years, and that birth certificate thing, I'm satisfied that what people say is true. But I don't want to die on that hill, because I'd rather go to another hill that I think is more controlling, and I'd fight it out there. That's what I'm saying. For what it's worth.
Well, my whole point, yeah. Thank you for that. That was very definitely helpful. So I got in some fake trouble that I'm on house arrest. I live in New York, but I'm on house arrest in Ohio. And I was thinking about filing an affidavit of truth, trying to take my jurisdiction back. So I'm just trying to make sure I do it the right way, because I don't want to get hemmed up anymore.
Oh, I get what you're saying. You listen, if you have jurisdiction, what is jurisdiction? Jurisdiction is the right to act respecting a given matter. Jurisdiction is the right to act respecting a given matter. It has a scope of authority. Authority is just a general word. Jurisdiction says, what's my scope? What's my authority? How far does it go? The English word is right. We talked about that a while ago. It is the duty.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's the duty to act, respect. You have duties. Nobody can take that from you. That's utterly impossible. People say, well, I want to get my jurisdiction back. Well, how'd you lose it? That's impossible. If it's your jurisdiction, right. It's not a tangible item, and a piece of paper is not going to change anything. If you've got the jurisdiction, whatever, and I know that here's the problem. I understand what you're saying. They have taken away your ability to enjoy your jurisdiction. They take away your ability to even act in responsibility respecting your jurisdiction. I get it. But let's talk right about it. Let's don't give them foot up and make them feel like they've got something that they don't have. They can't have that. You know, the Declaration of 76 says that we hold these truths to be self-evident. That means we don't have to prove this. It's so blatantly obvious. We're going to start here. That all men are created equal, it says, and that's self-evident, before the law. Number two, that they are endowed, not outdowed, endowed inside of their being with certain unalienable rights. What are these? What's a right? It's jurisdiction. That's the Anglo word for jurisdiction, for authority.
Yeah.
With certain, that's inside of you. God, when he made you, he wound up and bound up your rights, your jurisdiction in your being, tripartite body, soul, and spirit. And then he says they are inalienable. That means nobody can take them from you. And number two, you can't even get rid of them. Why? Because when God gives a responsibility to a man, he can't give it to somebody else. It's not even possible. He will answer for it. You will answer for your responsibility. That's what I'm saying. So they didn't take it from you, but you want to act. Now, do you have legal counsel?
Look, yes, I do, and I just felt like he's been pawning me off, man. And I'm just fed up. I'm just fed up. I paid him about $5,000, and they had me locked up for 18 days from March 1st to the 18th. I drove from New York to go to court in Ohio, and they locked me up, left my car outside and everything. I'm just, like, embarrassed and upset because I feel like I don't have control over the situation.
They didn't give you bail?
No.
Are you on bail now? Are you on bail now?
I think we lost him. He suddenly went away. No, there he is. I have turned the Q&A on so we can take questions if you want to do that. I appreciate you going on so long, Brent.
Okay.
You want me to unmute him so you can talk to him just a little bit more?
Oh, that'd be all right. Is John Gerard back?
Hi. I'm sorry about that. I accidentally disconnected the call.
Hang on just a second.
I thought maybe they'd taken your jurisdiction away from you, the freedom of speech or something there for a minute.
No, go ahead.
Sorry about that. I accidentally disconnected the call. They did give me bail. This is from a 2018 traffic stop that was an illegitimate stop. They gave me an OR bond once I realized I had to go to court. Something else had happened. They took my bond away. So when I went to court, they arrested me. And on March 18th, they gave me the bail back. But they made me take a plea for F4 for attempting to buy marijuana. And I have a marijuana license in my state. And at the time of the traffic stop where I bought the marijuana from. So they gave it back, and now I have to go back to court May 12th, and I'm on the box at my house, and they're trying to put me on probation. It's just a circus at my expense.
You're in, so what state you in now?
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, but you're from New York, right?
Yeah, well, I'm from Ohio, but I moved to New York in 2018. So I'm a citizen. I live in New York. I have a New York ID. I pay taxes up there and everything.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. So you have a lawyer and you paid him, but he's not doing anything. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. This case should have been thrown out, but he just keeps on ponding me and ponding me like the leverage or something.
Well, is he trying to get more money out of you?
No, not unless I want to take it to trial, but I think that's over with. This paperwork that I have says when I go back to court May 12th or 13th, they'll argue the sentence there.
And what do you think the sentence will be?
probably probation, but it's a little small. It's one of those little small vacation towns. You know, you go there on vacation and leave on probation. So I feel like they're probably going to try to put me on an extended period of probation with a bunch of stupid stipulations, but I don't have a record at all.
Wow. So are you in a position to appeal the decision, or have you already pled out and that's the end of it?
I remember the judge saying I have 30 days to plead it out. So I bought a bunch of books that led me to the website, the Alliance Liberty, and then to this phone number, hoping that I can do the right thing, file the right paperwork before 30 days is up. You know what I mean?
Well, your lawyer, you're not talking to him at all? He doesn't?
No, because every time I send him a text or something or call him, he's not respecting me. He doesn't answer my phone call. The charge isn't that big, but my life is on stake here. Even though this may not be big to them, this is big to me. You know, I feel like he's just pawning me off, not taking me serious. So at this point in my head, I'm like, I need to probably put my life in my hands and get rid of this guy.
Well, what you need to do then is find, if you've got money, find another lawyer.
But this is supposedly one of the best guys in that city of Sandusky, Ohio.
Yeah. But he hadn't done anything, you're saying.
He ain't done anything. He got me, I went to jail for 18 days, and I've been reporting to these people for like about 2 years now for a traffic stop.
So it's a misdemeanor?
It was a misdemeanor, but it's just a circus, right? It was a misdemeanor. Right now, I pled it to an F4, a felony, attempting to buy marijuana. I've never heard of attempting to buy it. And I still have a medical marijuana license, and they're attempting to they drug tested me, and they made me pay for my own drug test because Cincinnati wouldn't drug test me because I'm not on probation. It's just a circus. They're doing whatever they want or compelling me to do whatever they want me to do.
But did they, when you pled out, did they say it's going to be worse if you don't take the plea?
No, they just told me all the possibles. Like, I could possibly lose my license. I can possibly go to jail for 18 months. I could possibly pay a fine up to, like, I think $12,000, stuff like that.
Well, if you don't want a felony, I would think a guy would want to withdraw his plea. But, again, I'm not able to lawfully interfere with you and your lawyer, so somehow you got to at least talk to him or find a lawyer that will help you.
Well, I mean, so what about the affidavits? Am I able to help myself in this situation? I mean, I know the gentleman was telling me about jurisdiction and it's our duty, it can't be taken away from me or my rights. I don't want to be compelled to perform. That's what I'm trying to get out of.
Compelled to do what?
I don't want to be compelled to perform. I have this ankle monitor on my ankle, and I don't want to partake in this stupid game that they're making me partake in.
Here's what they've got. They've got force and power. Authority doesn't mean anything. They do what they want, and they can force people through using clubs and whips and cages and guns and dogs and stuff like that to get what they want. But what you don't want, I would think, you sound like you don't want to. You don't want a felony. You'd rather be a misdemeanor.
Yes, but I think that's over with. I think I'm past that part, unless you said I can withdraw my plea.
Well, I don't know the timing on that. I don't know all the facts. When I first talked to you, of course,
right,
I didn't know this was a criminal matter, you know. Here I was talking about all sorts of things, didn't know. That's why it is important, and if you can find counsel, it'll take care of the problem to try to help. And if you think this counsel's not helping, you can find other counsel and get rid of him that way.
All right, but the affidavits won't help me at all, sir? That's what you're saying? The stuff on the website, the templates and all that?
You can send in affidavits, but it's not going to change what happened, huh? Even if they're true.
Okay.
Affidavits are evidence, but they're used before trial. They're used before trial to get past 12B6 motions and things like that. But if you get into trial, even if you put in an affidavit, it won't be accepted in court unless you'll submit yourself to cross-examination on what's in the affidavit. All testimony in court, ultimately, is oral testimony. Affidavits are just there to kind of give people an idea what you're willing to commit to.
So I should probably wait until this sentence thing, and then afterwards I can probably do the affidavit thing.
Well,
oh, man, I don't want to sound like this. I need to figure out what I'm doing.
What you got to have, if you've got counsel or money, you need to get counsel. I don't know your situation. I'm just saying as a general rule, if you don't have counsel that's for you, you're not going to know what to do. Listen, when you're under the gun like this, I don't care if you're a lawyer or not a lawyer, you need counsel. You can't do it yourself because your mind is in a different place. You're under the gun. You're the guy they're trying to destroy or do something to, and you need help.
Mm-hmm.
I've known a lot of lawyers that have been criminally prosecuted. They get killed.
It's just one thing after another.
Yeah, they're not even in the emotional state to deal with it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's one thing after another for me. Everyone has something going on, but I'm at the end of my money train right now. I'm going through a divorce, actually. You know what I mean? So it's just started. So with that and then with this, it's like it's one thing after another. So I'm just trying to stay as level-headed as possible. You know, so
no, don't be too discouraged, because trouble comes. It always comes in bunches at some time in a man's life, and
mm-hmm.
it knocks it clear down. This has been my experience watching myself, watching other people. You're going to get hit. Every man, every woman is going to get hit hard at some time in their life, almost without exception, and it's going to be so hard you don't think you can get up. But you will.
Right.
You'll get through it. You'll get through it.
Okay. We have other questions. I'd like to move on if that's enough for you.
That's fine. Well, good talking to you.
Thank you all. Yeah, thank you all. Appreciate you.
Harry, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, while you're waiting, still no word from John Gerard. That's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, I want to mention the wiki to everybody. Go over and check it out and send... any updates to Terry at NationalLibertyAlliance.org. And I think Jan had something to say, and then he has some questions. I appreciate you staying here. Brent has done this, so everybody knows, on just a spur of the moment. And we really appreciate it, Brent.
Well, my pleasure.
Okay, Jan, you got something? If you're talking, we're not hearing, Jan.
Yeah, I just was looking for my mute button. I got too many pages open here, as usual. Okay, I would like to make a comment about the Red Pill Expo. This happens once every year. This year it's going to be in Rapid City, South Dakota. They've got a nice hotel picked out for a venue. That's a great area if you have a family and want to take them along and do some sightseeing. Mount Rushmore is a short drive away. If you're coming in from the east, there's the Badlands. If you're coming in from the south, there is the Crazy Horse Monument, where they're taking an entire mountain and making a monument to Crazy Horse. They've been working on it for about 20 to 40 years, and they probably have 20 years to go. Farther south, there are some dinosaur pits where they keep digging up all types of dinosaur bones and that sort of thing. It's an area where everybody gathered and got hung up in a tar pit, I guess. There's the Needles and many other things, Mount Rushmore to see. And they have a really great lineup of speakers talking about all sorts of things from the COVID and so on. You can find information on it at redpillexpo.org. And it will be on the first weekend in June. It starts really on Friday night the 4th, but the main venue is from the 5th and 6th. And it's really well worth attending. I was out to the Black Hills 3 years ago. It's about a 1,550-mile drive for me, so I'm I'm not going to make it this year, but if anybody's close to it, or even, you know, a few hundred miles, I would highly recommend that you go. And also, if you're planning to go, please send me an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. If we get enough people together, we can get a free table at the expo so we can send some of our members. I know Dan from Montana is going, and I think Francine said she's going, and I don't know if you're going, Brent. I think I'd heard your name mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So we would like to get as many people as we can to go, and then we'll have support for the table. So please, if you think you would like to attend at all, look them up, take a look at the speakers. They got some really good speakers, and send me an email, and we'll take it from there. So other than that, Brent, I have about four or five more questions, if you're up to it.
Sure. Come on, my voice holds out.
We love a trooper. First question. What are we to do as individuals facing mask ordinances for kids playing sports?
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Mask, what?
A lot of these schools have their kids wearing masks all day long. When they're going out to play sports, whatever athletics are involved.
I don't have children anymore. I mean, they're grown. So, and I guess on top of that, the other side of it was I decided when I started having a family that I wouldn't send them to school. I'd just school them at home, and we did. Sometimes that's not possible. Sometimes it's a one-parent family, and mom or dad have to work, or sometimes both mom and dad have to work just because it takes that much to put beans on the table. I understand all that, but going to school, sending your children to a government school is dangerous. There's no question about it. Well, what happens at government schools? Well, let's start with the simple stuff. Sometimes somebody pulls out a pistol and kills a bunch of people. They got, in a lot of places, of course, they've got guards and armed guards all over the schools. Why would anyone want to send their children into that kind of environment? I don't know. I suppose you feel desperate. That's why people do it. Don't have to do that. And by the way, homeschooling doesn't have to be hard. You don't have to do at home what they do at school. As a matter of fact, if you do what they do at school, you're defeating the purpose of homeschooling. What is homeschooling? Homeschooling is where you learn at home. And there are a lot of things people learn at home. First thing, you know, did you ever stop to consider when you were a child growing up, before you ever went to school, your parents had taught you the English tongue? Most of you. There might be some listening that learned another tongue. They didn't even have to try. No, you were just there, and you listened, and you got an education. And being able to talk separates you from the animals. That's no small matter, friends. So home education is that kind of thing, Deuteronomy chapter 6. When you're with your children, when you're getting up in the morning, when you're walking down the road, when you're working, when you go to bed at night, when you're eating a meal at the table, they're watching everything you do. And believe me, they're hearing everything you say, and they're soaking up every bit of it. You're teaching them, whether you know it or not. The only question is, are you teaching them what's right or what's wrong? All you need to teach your children is reading, writing, and arithmetic. They'll learn how to talk, and they'll learn how to write if you concentrate on those. I'll take you to another book. The first book I ever wrote of any consequence, and it wasn't that big, but it was the first book. It's available on the website. The name of it is Teach Freemanship. Teach Freemanship. And it's a short book, and I break down there in that book the arts of freedom. The arts of freedom and what you're supposed to teach your children. There are only four. Just four. These and no others, these and no more. Teach them to read, to write, to listen, and to speak. To read, to write, to listen, and to speak. Those are what people call today the liberal arts. Somebody just texted me. I better see what they're saying. Well, yeah, the name, somebody said no, the name is Teach Freedom's Arts. That's true. That was the name. I used to have the title on it, Teach Freemanship. Teach Freemanship. And to teach freedom's arts, which are the arts of language, they're just four, reading, writing, listening, and speaking. That's all there is. There isn't anything else. There never has been. Well, what about geography? What about physics? What about spelling? You teach those four, you'll get all that. because they'll be reading all about that stuff. They'll pick out what they're interested in, and they'll read how many people can really read. People can read the newspaper to load their brains, but can you read and follow a fellow's relationships between sentences and really get good at it? It takes a lifetime. But you start now. Hey, well, here's another thing. If you read to your children, they'll be readers. If you read to your children, they'll be readers. That's the way you teach them to read. How do I know? Well, we've homeschooled about 8 of them. They're doing okay. I mean, they can read and write and listen and speak. Now, they don't always listen to their dad the way they ought to. Oh, that's a struggle. But truth is, they come to me often, and they'll say, Dad, don't you think, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and they'll reel off some fundamental principle that they're dealing with, and they'll tell me what they think, and I'm thinking to myself, I've only tried to pound that into your head about 10,000 times, and now you're coming back to me like it's your idea. Do I say anything? No, I don't say a word. I just say, well, yeah, I never thought about that, but I kind of do think that. Oh, okay, I did too, Dad. Well, that settles that. See, they got it, but they didn't know how they got it. That's the way it is when you're around children. They think they're thinking about something else. They may be, but they're soaking like a sponge. Everything that comes in their eye gate, their ear gate, that they smell in their nostrils, the taste with their tongue, don't let them taste the wrong things too early. That's what they'll like the rest of their life, and it may be bad. I can still smell my great-granddad's shop. I used to go in when I was 4, 5, 6 years old. I'd smell it. And if I ever smell that again, why? Because I recall everything that I soaked up when I was a little boy. You need to read to your children. Forget school. What about sports? Oh, they say, what about sports? So I'll give you Tom Jefferson's advice. Don't worry about games with balls. Don't worry about that. No. Pick up a firearm and learn how to use it safely and effectively. And carry a gun. It will increase your confidence, he says. He said, don't waste your time chasing balls around pasture fields. Football, basketball. Oh, I did all those things, and I like to think I was good at it and all. But was that real? Did that really profit me? No. What I did do, and what I saw with a lot of it, I learned how to cheat. Because the people that were in charge of it, that's all they were interested in. We got to get back to fundamentals, friends. I'm preaching a different point of view here, I know. Oh, you want exercise? Get a shovel and get to work out in the yard. Find something to do. There's plenty to do, but send in your children to school where they're going to destroy them. They're teaching them to be obedient automatons for the government, lackeys, wear a diaper on your head. Why would anybody want to do that? That's evil. Let's don't do that with our children. Well, that's just a suggestion, but the principles I've mentioned, you say, well, I can't do that. I understand. I don't know all the facts of everybody's case. I'm just talking about general principles here. Somebody sent me a message. Maybe they were criticizing what I was saying. Let me see what it is. Oh, you have zero, so it goes on there, wearing masks. Oh, wearing masks during sports? No, the answer is, that's right. Why send your government or your children to a government school where they're going to be abused that way and making them wear masks? At some point, people just need to check out. This is what is destroying America. Not education, miseducation. People say education is the answer. That's a silly statement. Unless you say, what education? You want to be educated to be a slave, or do you want to be educated to be a freeman? You only have two choices. If you educate and teach your children the arts of freedom, reading, writing, listening, and speaking, they'll be freemen and free women. You send them to a government school, they're going to be taught to be slaves to the powers that be. No, I'm not exaggerating. That's the history of government education in America. Well, back to you.
I just wanted to slip in this, is that who did this virus affect the least? Is the kids.
Yeah, kids. I would argue it didn't affect anybody except people who were...
Well, I agree with that. The trouble is that same thing that we have with common law is nobody's going to enforce what we assert as our rights. I have a right not to wear a mask if I'm not infected. But
I have a right to wear a mask whether anybody says I to not wear a mask whether anybody says I am or ain't.
There you go.
I mean,
there you go.
If you're in football and they're telling you to put a mask on your face, you're not going to be able to perform as well. You're not going to be able to hear as well. You're not going to be able to speak and be heard if you need to holler at another team member.
Well,
you're not
going
to be able to get the oxygen you need.
That's right.
Why do it? Just say, I'm not going to do that. If you want to play sports, fine, but don't wear a mask.
And I agree. What I'm trying to say is that there's a lot of information on the Internet, and they just need to be prepared to tell these people that's ridiculous. And if it's, I don't know if it's attached to school or if it's attached to just a league, a local league, that they had to make that rule to do it. And I think that they can talk to the other parents, because that's who controls those, and they can get the rule changed. But the ultimate thing is, teach your kids and don't rely on the school to do it if you can do it. Okay.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. I'm glad you let me add.
Next question, Brent. A monumental case the National Liberty Alliance needs to put their fist on is the blatant violation of churches to operate as a church. Many churches have filed suit, and there are pastors who show their love by taking action against governors, like, for example, Pastor Mike McClure of Calvary Christian Fellowship in San Jose, California, versus Gavin Newsom, and other cases filed in New York, New Jersey, and so on. The New York case against Andrew Cuomo is settled and makes good precedence for other cases. If there is a way we can sue the government for blatant war against the First Amendment, can we do that? If we hit hard, it might give us standing in our other court cases. My question is, do you think this can be done?
What, sue the government because they're trying to keep churches from meeting? That's why I'm taking the question.
Right.
Well, three cases come to mind are presently operating. Just heard of one potential case in Canada. A fellow sent me a video of a pastor running Canadian police out of the church house. They came in without a warrant. Oh, he was ticked. I don't blame him. Another case of a pastor in Canada, he's from the United States. He pastors a church up in Alberta, I believe. And the government came, arrested him, threw him in jail, and said, all you have to do to get out is say you're going to do what the judge says. And, well, what does the judge say? Well, you can't hold church. He said, well, if you let me out, I'm going to have church Sunday, and we're going to go right back at it. So they haven't let him out. And then the case of the Grace Community Church on Van Nuys Boulevard in San Fernando Valley. At first, that church didn't meet. That's been almost a year ago. It's a large church. There are probably at least 5,000 people in two services on a Sunday morning. And the preacher would show up and just kept preaching. Nobody was there at first. And slowly, people started trickling in Sunday by Sunday. And to get to the end of the story, that church has more people in it now than it's had for a few years and more money than it's ever had coming in. And they have not passed the plate once in almost a year since this whole thing started. They haven't passed the plate. And they have more giving than they've ever had. That particular case, the parking lot of that church is leased from the city. And the city said, if you don't do what the governor says and not have church Sunday, we're breaking the lease. So they went into court. But they couldn't get the lease broke. So they said, we're going to take all the homeless people in the Los Angeles area and we're going to bring them to live in your parking lot. And they said, fine, you do that. That'll be good, and we'll send all our seminary students out there to evangelize them. Well, that ticked them off, so they didn't do that. Every Sunday they meet, and they've been meeting now for a year, you see, almost. Well, they've been meeting almost a year. There's a massive fine that's levied against the church. Well, the church went into court way long time ago, and they said, fine, we'll put all this money in an escrow account pending outcome of this litigation. And Governor Newsom hasn't been able to crack that nut. They just keep meeting and keep putting money in the escrow account, but haven't paid any of it to the city or the government. That's what needs to be done. And it needs to be done everywhere, because if speech is not allowed to be utterly unfettered in churches, there will be no free speech in America anywhere. And that is why, that explains why, and I said this last week, I remember, the whorehouses are open in Nevada. The casinos are open on all the Indian reservations and in Nevada, all over the country. The abortion mills are open. Everything's open to varying degrees, but churches can't be allowed to be open because the useful idiots of the evil empire and the scratch himself at the top of the heap knows that the key to this whole thing and to taking over our country is freedom of speech. We've got to stop people saying that we're wrong. How do you explain what's going on the internet, but more importantly, how do you explain what's going on even more viciously against Bible-teaching congregations? Bible-teaching congregations. They know. They don't care. They've got to destroy two things: maleness, mannishness, as some people say, and free speech. Those are key to destroying freedom. That's what's happening. And yeah, you can resist in court. The judges have proven in those cases, the judges have proven to be sympathetic to the churches. There was a federal judge. Remember that federal judge back in, newly appointed, Trump had appointed him, young fella, back in Kentucky, that vindicated the church that came into court? Absolutely. Well, that seems to be the trend in the courts. But that doesn't mean, of course, that the government will stop doing it and obey the courts. As I'd said a while ago, the courts don't have the power to enforce their will to any degree. Well, next question, if there's another one, if John and Gerard aren't back.
They're not back yet, and there's three people in the queue. Jan, do you have any more questions? That was to give him time to find his microphone button.
Yep, I found a button. Yes, I have a couple more for you, Brent.
Okay.
One is, I see most of my mail is addressed with my name in all caps. Some of the Patriot YouTubers and others say, when I open my all cap name addressed mail, I will be agreeing to a blind contract. Most say, return to sender, and under that, sign, no contract. What's up with this mailing? Is it serious enough to return mail with no contract?
Who's sending this mail? Do they say?
They don't say who. It's just some mail that these people get. It's addressed in their all caps.
Well, because I don't have a lot of details, I'll just talk about the particular subject for a minute, because it bears saying a few words concerning this whole thing about all caps. Don't pay any attention to it. Now, I know, as I said in the beginning, I'm speaking for myself. I'm giving you my convictions. I've been around this for a long time. I had a client in federal court in a criminal case a number of years ago, and they had hired a man before I got into the case. It was a retrying of a case. It was a mistrial because of jury impropriety. And we tried it again. By the time I got there, they'd already tried it once and lost. And they'd hired a man during that time, didn't have any lawyer in the case. It was a big case, big-time case. They hired a man to show them how to file all their papers using caps in the way that wouldn't get them in trouble, capital letters. What he did was skin them out of about $50,000 and got them in deeper trouble. All that whole thing about capitalization is a distraction to get us off of what's really important. And it's not important at all. It doesn't even mean anything. Why do we have caps in legal papers? I'll tell you why we have capital letters. All caps will have your name in all caps, and they'll have the word order and some other words. It's a custom and a habit that arose out of the use of the typewriter. A custom and a habit that arose out of the use and the invention of the typewriter. You know, before we had typewriters, all papers were filed, handwritten, and all the orders of the judge were handwritten. I remember being in a courthouse and seeing, as I was doing research in the records room for property, seeing an order from a judge in a case that Abraham Lincoln was in, and he had defended the owner of slaves who had absconded. The sheriff was charged to get him back, and the slaveholder, a fellow named Matson, hired Abe Lincoln to defend him and help him get his slaves back. They'd come over from Kentucky into Illinois. Every year they came over to farm. Well, they wrote it all out. There were no capital letters in that with the order of the court. It was rather long. It was a order for freedom for five slaves, a mother and four children. Well, by the time the typewriter came along, the only option you had was lowercase and uppercase. And so all of the title, the caption of cases at that time was all capital letters. And as far back as I can remember, that's what I remember. And then along come computers. And it took a few decades, but now the courts are accepting things that aren't in all capital letters. Capital letters are hard to read compared to serif type. The Seventh Federal Circuit just came out with an order, not an order, an encouragement to lawyers to not use all capital letters when they draft orders and do pleadings. Why do we do it? As again, I said the typewriter is one big reason. And I saw a fellow on YouTube, he was from Australia, an Aussie, and he had a whole theory worked out about capital letters and how it's destroying the courts and we need to learn how to do this. Listen, if they're using capital letters, I don't want to use them. I don't want to get involved in their hocus-pocus, if that's really true, but it's not. But this fella, like a lot, would have you believe that there's some kind of magic hocus-pocus that the government's trying to play on you by using capital letters. They don't have a clue what they're doing. And in the past, in ancient history, consider, for instance, the manuscripts of the New Testament written in the Greek tongue. The oldest manuscripts we have of the complete New Testament are from about 350 A.D. Codex Alexandrinus, Codex Vaticanus, and Codex A, or B, rather. B, A, and Alexandrinus, that's A, Vaticanus, and B. And those codexes of the New Testament are written in all capital letters, every word. Why did they do that? Well, it was an attempt to be respectful to the whole Bible. That's what it was. And there's a good chance those were ordered, printed by Constantine, although he did order some printed in all uncials. And those are very beautiful, too. They did them in a very beautiful way. But then we have manuscripts written where the certain names are all capitalized, the name of Jesus Christ, for instance, and maybe the holy name in the Old Testament of God, Yahuwah, all those kinds of things. But this has been a habit over the centuries that capital letters are used to stress, to make things stand out on the paper or the page or the papyri or the leather vellum, whatever. There's no magic to it. Never has been. I have never seen anybody who's taught that to people that litigate in court that did anything but get them in trouble, make the judge mad, make the other lawyers mad, and once the judge gets mad, do you think he's not human? Of course he is. Well, I know they do things that are unlawful. I'm not particularly fond of them either, but recognize they're just like me and you. They get mad, they get glad, they get sad, they lack confidence, they get confused, lack a lot of confidence, as a matter of fact, and you got to deal with them on a personal level. And so you want to make them mad, just do those kind of things. Forget all this stuff. Again, this is Brent speaking, and what I say may or may not be the opinions of the leaders of National Liberty Alliance, but they let me come on here and say a few words. I'm saying a lot of words tonight because of conditions and circumstances beyond their control. But no, don't spend your money on that. Don't waste your time trying to understand that. You want to help our country. You want to help yourself. You want to help your community, your family, your children, your grandchildren. Learn what the true law is, the true way of doing things, the laws of nature. Just two volumes, all you got to worry about, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. Concentrate on that. No, don't worry about, and by the way, opening an envelope will never establish a contract in a common law country. There's no cases on the books I've ever seen or ever heard tell of where you contract with somebody by opening an envelope. No, contracts are very specific. It has certain elements, and they're not that hard, and they're pretty easy. I had said a while ago we're teaching a case on trust law at 4 o'clock Pacific time on the Internet. Go to commonlawyer.com. Trust law is a species of contract law. What is a contract? A contract, most fundamentally, always exists where there's at least one promise between two or more people. One promise, at least one, that the courts, that the law will enforce. That's a contract. It comes in different forms. There is the arm's length contract. We talked about this yesterday, Saturday. Go to commonlawyer.com. You can sign up and learn about contracts. That's part of contract law. There has to be one promise. There are arm's length contracts. That's a common law contract. Two parties where there's a quid pro quo, an exchange of promises or exchange of commitments. And then there's trust law where there's just one undertaking. There's no exchange. There's no consideration given back and forth. But our law recognizes it, that undertaking, that commitment, that promise, and enforces it of the settlor of the trust. Opening an envelope doesn't create a contract. No. I don't know all the circumstances of what you said. I'm just giving you general principles of law that are incontrovertible and applied in all cases. But there are sometimes where certain facts, but opening an envelope, no, I can't imagine any situation where opening an envelope would constitute a contract. Back to you.
Okay, next question. It appears that most cases against governors are failing. Is this because these cases are using bar attorneys to fight civil battles? Should we instead be fighting constitutional battles?
Well, when they go against the governors, they're raising constitutional questions. That's why they're winning. The ones I've read about, I'm most familiar with what's going on in Michigan, which is a hot bed of madness right now because the governor and the attorney general are a couple of Jezebels that have been well trained to be that way. But they're losing. These Jezebels are losing in the courts of Michigan, the Supreme Court of the state. No, don't say they're winning. I just cited the case out in California. That case, the judges have been friendly. Up in Canada, the judges aren't being lawful at all. They've got more of a grip on them, evil empire does up there, than they do down here. It's bad here. It's worse up there. But we're doing pretty good here. And when you go into court, you're arguing, you should be arguing in these cases where the governors are doing this, the first principles of common law. What is the most fundamental first principle of common law that stands like an umbrella over all law? It is, we call it, due process. Well, what is due process? Well, it is the process, the course of action that is due and owing to all concerned. I mean, no man's Magna Carta laid out the principle in good words, said no man's life, liberty, or property shall be taken without the law of the land. The law of the land, what's that? Well, that's due process. That was their word for due process. Our Constitution says this is the law of the land. Well, what's that? That's due process. Well, what's due process? That's our common law. Our common law is not a list of rights and wrongs. Our common law sets forth due process, a course, a path to follow. This is consistent with the laws of nature's God. We call it the Bible. Jesus Christ didn't say, I'm a list of laws. He said, I'm the way. That means roadway, odos. The Old Testament talks about the ways and the paths. The word Torah, most often translated law in the Old Testament, the Hebrew word, means in the verb form, fundamentally, the way, the road, pointed out with the index finger. This is the way our Maker set things up, that if we do things the right way, we'll get the right result. That's what our common law is. That's what we need to learn. That's what we need to be concentrating on. Again, I keep referring you. I guess I've devoted most of my life to trying to get these ideas across. Go to commonlawyer.com. Commonlawyer.com. Go to the books button. You'll find there a book called Excellence of the Common Law, 758 pages, tracing the history of the antagonism between the law of the land, our common law, and the law of the city. From the founding, the settling of the city of Babylon, 4,200 years ago or more, on every continent up to the present. And what we see about our common law is that it is the way we do things. It stresses how. And that's what our Constitution stresses. Our Constitution doesn't say, okay, Joe Biden's supposed to be president. No, that's the result. Our Constitution doesn't say that. It says, here's how the president is to be chosen and put into office. How? H-O-W. Here's how senators are to be chosen. Here's how trials are to be conducted. How? With a jury. Doesn't tell you much more than that because the common law, all the details about that, the common law informs our Constitution. Again, we're looking to get on a road, friends, neighbors, and kin. We're looking to get on the right path. We're looking to be righteous. Do you hunger and thirst after what is right? Then get your nose pointed in the right direction, and you'll be right-headed. That's what that means, righteousness. Right-headed. The question isn't, do you make mistakes? The question isn't, do you leave the path sometimes when you shouldn't? The question, ultimate question is, are you on the right road? Are you headed in the right direction? Are you making progress? And screaming and hollering about government doesn't get you anywhere. No, you got to get on the right road, you, individually. Quit worrying about the bozos and the legislature. They're wrapped up, wound up, and bound up in their own whims and difficulties. They're more unconfident about who they are and what they're doing than you are, by far, probably. They're not going to help you. You got to do it. We got to defend ourselves. We got to do it. Is there another question, or was there a follow-up there? You tell me, did I answer that question sufficiently, or did I respond to it properly?
Yes, that's fine.
Good.
I just have one last question on those sent in by email, and then we have some people in the queue. The last email question is, I was watching an online video, and it contained an article that the state of New York had passed the vaccine passport mandate on April 2nd. I've heard from time to time Gerard bring up potential door-to-door vaccine possibilities, but apparently it is not that deep-reaching yet, as it includes enforcement only in major public venues. I would like to know NLA's response, or in this case, your response and plan of action.
Well, again, this isn't NLA's response. This is my response.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what I see and what I perceive about NLA. NLA is devoted to teaching what the true law is. NLA doesn't have guns and whips and clubs like the government does. They're not out to beat people around. They're out to do the thing that the government fears much worse than anybody carrying a gun, and that's words. The evil empire and those greasy devils that have their bony fingers on the levers of power as we speak, whoever they may be, wherever they are, they fear the expression of truth greater than any other thing, anything. Oh, the militia is important, yes. But what they fear is freedom of speech. And that's why, as I said a while ago, they're doing two things. Watch me close again. They're shutting down churches. What else are they shutting down? Have you noticed? Courts. If there isn't freedom of speech in courts, the ability to confront witnesses brought out against you in a criminal case, the ability to have a jury trial, and the churches are shut down, and there's no freedom of speech in the courts or the churches, you can't even get there. And that's what they're trying to do. They know that's the key to winning. That's why I'm saying what I'm saying. And that's why you need to be saying the truth. Don't overdo it. Don't go looking for somebody to fight with. I'm reminded of John Wycliffe. I keep coming back to him. John Wycliffe lived in the middle of the 1300s, the 14th century in England. He knew he was losing his country. He had a two-pronged attack to get it back. He's known best for translating the Bible into English for the first time, the whole thing. He didn't translate it from the original tongues. He didn't have them, didn't have any manuscripts. He translated it from the Latin Vulgate, which he knew very well. And then the second thing that he said had to happen, he put in the front of that Bible in the manuscripts, they were handwritten, and it said in the front, in the copies that went out, it said, I made this translation so that the boy behind the plow may read. That was the first prong. The second prong, he said, we've got to teach the common law at Oxford University. Two-pronged attack. The common law has to be reestablished. And it was being lost in the face of Romanism, in the Roman Church, taking over the courts. So he did that. He was a contemporary and probably a brother-in-law to Chaucer, the author of that famous poetry, Canterbury Tales. They teamed up. Chaucer was a barrister. He was a common lawyer. They threatened his life. He had to leave the country. They threatened Wycliffe's life, and they almost got him tried and killed, but not quite. He had a protector. But those two things, the courts, and that's what Wycliffe was saying. If we don't have freedom of speech in the courts and in the churches, saying what has to be said, we're not going to win. But in the midst of all that madness, after he got the Bible translated in English, it was a very wooden translation. Reads like Latin with English words. 70 of his students, he's a professor at Merton College at Oxford, 70 of his students had copies of that Bible. And he sent his students out to stand at the crossroads and on the corners of the towns and villages and read the Bible out loud. Just read it. That's all. Just read it. And he said to them when they left, he said, do not seek a martyr's crown. Do not seek a martyr's crown, but rather just read the Bible out loud, and a martyr's crown will probably find you soon enough. You say the truth, they're going to come after you. What is truth? Jesus Christ asked Pilate during his capital murder, they're going to murder him, his trial, capital trial. What is truth? Well, I'll tell you what truth is. Truth is the way things are, and they're not going to change. And what God says is going to happen is true. It's not going to change. And it is, by the way, the very definition of law, the way things are, and they're not going to change. You're going to get the same result, the same action. You're going to get the same reaction. And for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That's true in life, and it's true in all our relationships. It's not going to change. You tell them that. You can't do that. You can't be sodomizing little boys and girls and each other and expect our country to prosper. You tell them that. Well, it's not going to change. It's true. But you tell them that, they're going to want to kill you because you're not carrying the flag in their gay parade. That is what is destroying our country. But it is words that makes people feel guilty and painful. And that's why they don't want anyone to speak the truth. What's the purpose of a trial in court before the jury? You hope that you fight hard enough in court, and our common law is an adversarial tradition. We go to court and fight, unlike the rest of the world. You hope you go to court and fight, and in the midst of the heat, of the confusion, and it is confusing in court when you're really fighting, of the battle, and somebody's on the witness stand, it's amazing to watch it happen. And all of a sudden, without warning, the naked truth bobs forth from the flux of cross-examination. And there it is. Nobody thought it would happen. Nobody would even guess that's what the truth was. And there it is. See, that's what court's all about in America. They got to shut down the courts. They're shutting them down. Constantly, I get notices from the courts where I'm supposed to be practicing. Here's the new policy in the midst of this terrible pandemic. Of course, I'm saying, what pandemic? I don't see any bodies piled up anywhere. What's going on here? Pandemic? That you can't even show that more than 1% of the population would be susceptible to it, much less die from it. And you haven't even proven, to my satisfaction, it even exists. What, because the Fox News says it? Or Biden says it? Or what I see now, the people that know say that it's not what they're saying it is. I'm talking about the doctors and the chemists and the biologists. They're all saying, no, this is going to destroy us. But the truth, you see, is what they don't want to hear. And that's the most powerful weapon we have. And truth becomes a weapon when it's expressed. Let's express it quietly, calmly, confidently. Is there another question, or was that the last one?
We have some in the queue at the moment, if you'd like to work on them.
Well, I guess I'm committed. I've been at it for 2.5 hours. So. Is there anything?
So, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll click on one. And
S-C-R-A-S-S-I-N-C.
Hey, Ron.
Yo. Hello.
Yeah, you're up.
Oh, well, hello. Yes, and thank you. And we've enjoyed sharing with you tonight. Appreciate being alive. And big kudos to the man. I think he goes by the name of Brent tonight, commonlawyer.com. Was that?
Name is Brent Winters.
Brent Winters?
Yes.
Hats off to you. He sounds like somebody that I would like to have as a grandfather or great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather. But I got one suspicion. And are you there now, Brent?
No, I'm here. Go ahead.
Okay, good. You're a lawyer, and or are you an attorney, or are and you both? In the way of title and profession only.
Yeah. Well, I'm a lawyer licensed to practice in courts. And
what state?
I've practiced in, I'm licensed in Illinois. I've practiced in federal courts in California and Oregon and state courts in other states. You do that on an individual basis. But there are two methods to license lawyers in America. Two methods. Number one, some states license lawyers through the authority of the highest court of the state. The highest court of the state, which we would normally call the Supreme Court of the state. And the highest court of the state in those states is in charge of admission to the bar and practice and discipline and all those things, whatever has to be done. Illinois is that way. Some states, like Texas and California, I believe Texas this way, I know California is, the state bar is in charge of the licensing and practice of law. They get to draw up the bar exam and decide who practices law and who doesn't. Now, in state,
I get now what you said.
Yeah.
May I interject, please?
Yeah, go
ahead. I get now what you said here. I think you said in some so-called states, state of state, the Supreme Court is giving the exam and doing the admittance of the bar and giving the certificate of good standing. And in other states, the bar itself, the office of the bar, is conducting that entrance into their union.
Yes. Now, in states where the bar association of that state is in charge, practice of law requires mandatory bar membership. You can't practice.
Is that what the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution meant?
Wait. Let me finish the sentence, then you can comment.
Thank you.
Can't practice law in those states unless you are a member of the bar in the states where the bar is in control of the practice of law. Go ahead.
Wow. You've got that kind of brain coming through that mind that I enjoy you can talk again. Plus you do a good job of talking. You can talk a long time, and I enjoy listening to you immensely.
Those are encouraging words. Thank you. Well, it helps keep me going because I get tired. I didn't expect this to happen, John and Gerard.
I only ever got to know one great grandpa of all the grandpas that were close enough that I could have had a chance to meet if they were alive, and didn't get to. So, you give me that air of mystique, because it's in the tone of your voice, and then it's in the solemnness of the way you carry and dispense with your words. You have this uncanny ability for the choice of words that I just love to duplicate. But anyway, more importantly, there's another man here that has a quick question, because I've already missed my opportunity to ask you 10 questions. So let this man get the chance to ask you, because he's hard as heck to even get on a call like this. He has his burn his saddle with this business, but he's open to listening, and I think he respects it. I want to say too that you really turned me on tonight when you was talking about the pistols and the guns and our responsibilities to possess, hold, carry, clean, and use when need be. And you said something about a martyr, and then you was asked jurisdiction, and I got to feel like, if I'm being honest with myself, what I'm reading from this man's share is that, okay, he still wants to live too. He doesn't want to be a martyr. He says no amount of paper is going to change anything, so authenticating the birth certificate from here to D.C. and back, and a letter of attorney, and how many a secured party creditor, and then the associating documents that have to support that in the concrete foundation next to Thomas Jefferson, and on ad infinitum. I just can't learn what I need to know about who's on first and what's on second, and I don't know who's on third well enough to be let alone. And I say this, and then I'll yield, and I want to again just thank you, because I've been listening to you for years, and you didn't know that till right now. So, and I salute all the greats before me who that have died in various places through martyrdom. But the court system, there's no party, no damage property. And I heard one man ask you, he doesn't want to be compelled, or state you, he didn't want to be compelled. Well, I don't need to be compelled either. And if I've learned anything about jurisdiction, I've learned that there's jurisdiction, and the Supreme Court said it at all times. It's challenge jurisdiction. It's got to be met. You disagree, Brent?
No, jurisdiction is the holy of holies of all legal traditions. God established a jurisdiction. Romans chapter 13, verse 1, there is no jurisdiction unless it is from God. God dispenses it. He's the holder of it. He's the source, the spring, and the fountain of all. What is jurisdiction? It's the right to act. The right. There's that word right, to act, respecting a given matter. Some translations say authority. The French translation says authoritea. I'm not
okay, so may I interject?
No, not yet. I got to finish this thought, and then I'll show
you. Okay, thank you. Excuse me.
Warrant, jurisdiction, and right. The King James Bible says power. There is no power. Oh, that's false. That's not what the Greek text says. And that's a clear mistranslation. Matter of fact, it's so clear, I have to say that it's because King James, of course, was a divine right of kings man, and he required all 54 of his translators agree with him on that point. And that's law of the city. The king, he said, has all power and authority in himself. Well, that's the evil empire. So authority is an important question, and jurisdiction is the number one question, true, when you go into court. If the court doesn't have jurisdiction over the matter, then no matter what happens, 20 years later you come back and say, well, the court didn't have jurisdiction here, and it would have to be undone. I know I'm exaggerating, but that's how important jurisdiction is. Back to you.
Okay, Ron, we need to give it
to this man who's been waiting patiently to ask you this question. Thank you again, Bryn. I've certainly enjoyed you.
Well, I enjoyed talking to you too, Ron. Thanks. I'm glad I got to talk to you. Always.
My name's Brandon. I'm son of Ron. Anyway, I just have a quick question. I've been dealing with these Gestapo's for a long time, and I'm not an old man, but I'm not a young man. And I've been paying them. I've been paying them, and that's the way I've been getting by. And they keep sending me these bills from all these court fines and all this stuff. And I was just wondering if there was a way that I could deal with these things besides giving them all my blood, sweat, and hard work, you know?
Now, are you the fellow I talked to a little bit ago?
No.
Oh, this is a new guy.
My first time ever listening to you, or maybe my third time, but...
I can't intelligently respond to the question at all because I don't have hardly any facts of your situation. And even if I did, I would have to assume that you've left some out. This is kind of hard.
What it is I got, like, DUIs and stuff like that, and they send me these bills for, like, $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000.
Well, I would say that...
They don't really go away, and
I would say at some point, impossibility is always a defense to any court order. If the court orders you to pay money and you don't have any money to pay, you need to tell the court. I realize it's abuse. I understand that. It's nothing but a machine designed to extract money. And it's an industry at this point. Oh, the whole DUI thing. It's an industry, like all the criminal law industry. But if you don't have the money to pay it, you need to say something. Somehow. Yeah. And say, I don't have any money, Judge. I'm bled dry. Nothing I can do. And if it's impossible for you to perform the judge's order, then that's a defense.
Well, I mean, I've been paying it, and I do have means of, like, working hard and paying for it. It's just sometimes I feel like their fines are just, they're crazy.
No, I know it is.
I just want to get my credit right, and I try to live it. I ain't trying to push them, and I try to avoid them as best as possible, but, it's just a lot of money.
Is there another question? There's other questions. Ron Thren, do you have anything else that you want to
add? No, that's it. Thank you. I appreciate it. That's it. That was my question.
Hello, this is Infamous Kenny.
Hi, Infamous Kenny. Go ahead. You got a question for Brent?
I've got a couple of comments as opposed to actual questions. Do you want me to wait until the end?
We might not make it. There's several other people in. If you can keep it short, I'll tell you what, I'll start a clock. How about 2 minutes total?
Okay, as far as our friend with the marijuana problem, it comes under the Uniform Controlled Substances Act. Study the exceptions, one of which is an ultimate user may lawfully, better than legally, possess controlled substances under the Act. The Act covers manufacture, distribution, dispensing, and possession. So if you're an ultimate user, the entire Act does not apply to you. The other issue is there was talk about the all caps name. I actually got a hold of a copy, since been stolen by the feds, of the judicial training videos out of the Judicial College at Reno, Nevada. And out of 18 videos in VHS form, the first 7 minutes of the first video was about the all caps name and how judges are taught to take silent judicial notice that when you claim that name, are you John Doe, you say yes, they take silent judicial notice, it's all caps, and that the United States Government Printing Office style manual says an all caps name is a vessel, corporation, other artificial entity, or decedent, none of which have rights. They're also taught to take silent judicial notice that you're breathing and talking, so you're obviously alive, you're not a decedent, don't look like a vessel, and a little too thick to be a piece of paper upon which a corporation or other artificial entity could be created on, and therefore you just used a fictitious name upon the court, which in most jurisdictions is a felony.
Well, now,
you think you're going to get out of there without paying up?
Yeah.
And yes, they get very upset when you don't play that game.
Well,
but I've also had judges literally run screaming from the bench.
Yeah. Well, this thing about all caps, I'm not changing my position on it unless somebody persuades me otherwise. Nobody ever has. I'm fully persuaded.
Just get a hold of the judicial training videos out of the Judicial College, Reno, Nevada.
But the Judicial College at Reno, Nevada is a private organization funded by a couple of wealthy men, maybe three or four, has nothing to do with law, nothing. And what the judges are taught there, and I know they go there, I mean, I know they go from all over the country, but it's designed to teach them to run over people, I understand that, how to handle people like you and others that don't agree with their point of view. I understand that, too. I'm glad you brought it up, though, because it gives me an opportunity to respond to it. But this whole thing about all caps, and what was that thing that you said? Your name is, just a minute, I'll make sure I call you by name. What's your name?
I am Kenneth Wayne of the House of Leeming.
Yeah, Ken.
NLA website, I'm Infamous Kenny.
Yeah, I remember you, Kenny, and I'm glad you brought it up. But let me say this. I think you cited some authority there, some that you claimed was authority about all capital letters. What was that, some kind of manual of style or something?
United States Government Printing Office Style Manual.
Well, the United States
the
Printing Office Government...
You take silent judicial notice of it.
Yeah, but silent judicial notice is not noticed to anybody. If it's not noticed to the parties, it's not noticed. Secondly, what the government printing office says is not law, and it's meaningless. And the manual that we use in the courts is what we're taught from the blue book when we go to law school. It changes every year. I still use what I learned decades ago from the blue book in law school. I still use that because that's what I know. Nobody complains. Most of what goes on in court with respect to style and things like that is convention and custom. There are books out there that they use, but if you don't follow them, you get used to doing this. That's why I was saying the Seventh Circuit just came down it's a bounce to an order telling lawyers, forget this capital letter stuff. We're tired of it. It's too hard to read. I don't use it anymore. I've used capital letters in my pleadings for years. I started doing that before the lawyers did. I just said, I'm not going to do this. I like to use large and small caps because on the computer, you can do that. It's more readable. I like it better. But just because some government manual says something doesn't mean that it has any sway or anybody's going to pay any attention to it. I have never heard of the government manual of style, and I've never heard of any lawyer that's ever mentioned it. I've never been told nor taught nor even suggested that I should follow it. And I've been filing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of papers in court for years. So if that tells you anything, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm sure it does. I think you're an honest man. I know about you. I've never met you personally.
You can find it on the internet.
Yeah, and I know that you have had a lot of experience too, by the way, experience that I don't want to mention right here, but unless you would want me to, but I don't know everything about it. What I'm saying to you, Kenny, is these things are true, that they're out there, but I don't know of any lawyers that know anything about it. Now, when you go to that judicial...
No, they don't beat the lawyers.
Now, when you go to that judicial school out there in Reno, I'm glad you brought that up too, Kenny, and that's something that most people don't know anything about, and you're getting to the bottom of some of our problem here. And I would like you to be able to say more about it. It's a kept secret what goes on there. And when judges go, they don't tell anybody. I found out inadvertently. I'm from a small rural community. But I found out the judges go there. Why do they go there? Because it's free. And they offer them all sorts of other courses, too, about just how to be a better writer, how to be a better speaker, how to do this. They offer them everything. And it's all funded by ultra-wealthy people that are not of my religious persuasion. Put it that way.
Yeah, I downloaded all their...
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you bringing it up, Kenny. I know that you're sincere about getting to the bottom of the problem. And some of the information you have, I'm fully satisfied I could use. Maybe we can talk later, but thanks for bringing it up. Back to you, Terry. Unless... Kenny has something else.
No, I think I muted Ken before he was supposed to. I hit knock somebody out of the queue, they can get back in.
Okay.
I'd like to move on. I gave Ken his 2 minutes, and so I'm going to move on if I can. Is that all right?
Oh, it's okay with me.
Or do we need to hear Ken?
Oh, I don't know. Is Kenny there?
Yeah, he's here.
Did he want to say one other thing? We got a couple of minutes. Up to you.
Okay. It's going to be hard to find you. Ken, get back in the queue, and we'll put you on back on. I'm going to move on to another one here. Okay, Catherine is on. Are you there, Catherine? Catherine from California, are you there? Well, I'm not doing the best today. Okay. Catherine, going once, going twice, three times. Okay. Twin Cities, Minnesota. Who are we talking to? Just first name.
My name's Albert. I'm in Minnesota. I just recently joined your website, National Liberty Alliance, and I also entered my birth certificate into the Common Law Court website also, and got the reference number and all that, I think, over the last year. And I am a pastor dealing with a situation with a corrupt doctor and social worker who is running the guardian wardenship scam, you know, using, you know, accessing your Social Security and your medical records. And I was dealing with a situation with an individual in Amsterdam who had like a similar circumstance where they trafficked her kids. And so my situation is I'm trying to get out of this situation and, you know, get my, you know, get everything back to normal and basically I want to move to living in private. You know, while still being able to function, you know, in the mainstream society. I informed the social worker and that she skipped due process, you know, by putting me in this situation. And basically, I already know it's like it's $50,000 for violation. It's a tort, you know, to be somebody's birth certificate already registered in the common law court. You know, then you go and do something like that. You owe them $50,000. And so I'm trying to get them to understand you can't do this because you don't have due process, you don't have jurisdiction, you're violating the Constitution, you're violating inalienable rights, you're violating the Bill of Rights, you're violating human rights, and you cannot do that, you know. So this is what I'm doing. I also joined your, in the website, like National Liberty Alliance, the militia, and the grand jury position. So what can you tell me? Because I'm trying to find, I also have what they call it, I got a QV trust number from the IRS, you know, for QV trust. And I'm trying to work on the other paperwork to get a foreign trust and all the rest of the paperwork to go with that. Okay, can you tell me what you got there? What can you do for me? Get me out of this situation.
Well, what was the last part of your question? What was the last thing you said?
I said I also have a QEV trust number as well as a QEV trust number from the IRS. And I have a number, reference number from the Common Law Court where I filed my birth certificate into the Common Law Court.
I don't know where the Common Law Court is. And if there is such a court, I'd be careful on the internet because they may be trying to scam you. out of something. I don't know who they are.
Well, when I looked it up a few minutes ago, you guys are like somewhere along the way, you guys are connected. Because
oh, well, maybe that's why I say, keep in mind, I'm not in L.A., and maybe NLA knew who they are, and they're connected with them. I don't know who they are. I'm just here, and the reason I'm talking because they're not here. But there was something else you had said before. I can't respond to that, the common law part. I can't respond to most of what you asked because I don't have enough details.
I was saying basically my birth certificate is registered in that website in the common law court, which is English law. And so anything that somebody does to me, you know, like aggression or, you know, doing things like I was telling you about, like the guardianship that this social worker did, that's $50,000. That's a $50,000 tort. You know.
Who wants $50,000?
I say it is a charge.
Oh.
$50,000 for a violation. Like if you look in the United States Code, it's $50,000. You know, to be coming up, you know, doing things like that.
Oh,
you cannot attempt to take away someone's rights or their freedom of movement, anything. You know, if you have in your Declaration of Human Rights, you have the right to self-determination. You cannot violate their human rights and their right to self-determination. Unless you just want to hand them free money for $50,000, you know, for each violation.
Well, you're just making comments then. You're making a point that it's a $50,000 fine. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of fines in the U.S. law and the U.S. code and the federal courts. It's a $20,000, up to $20,000, and I forget how many years in jail to tamper with evidence or filings in a court. I've watched clerks in federal court and U.S. prosecutors tamper with evidence with absolute freedom and abandonment, not fearing a moment that they would ever be prosecuted for a felony. I've never heard of it happening, though. It may as well be screaming to the wall. It's not going to change. The judges don't seem to pay any attention. There are a lot of things written in the law. You know, anybody, I don't care who you are, if you got enough time, you can figure out what the law is on any particular point. But that doesn't help a fellow much. What helps is, a cult, ultimately, you have to take into consideration also, what's the court likely going to do? Remember, just because the legislature can pass a law doesn't mean the courts are going to pay attention to it. And if the courts do pay attention to it and say, we want this enforced, they don't have the power of enforcement. They have to depend upon the executive branch for that, and if the executive branch doesn't want to enforce it, they won't. So we can talk about $50,000 here, $20,000 here. If the courts don't care, it doesn't make any difference. And they're the only ones who would have a big say to initiate that kind of a fine. And even if they initiate it, as I said a while ago, it may not be enforced by the other branches. So just knowing what the law is good to know, but without knowing what reality is, it's not very helpful. Now, you can find people, as I said a while ago, all over the Internet that will tell you what they believe the law is. And they will charge you lots of money, even, to take their courses, etc. And a lot of it is just hucksterism. They're horn-swoggling people. A lot of it. I don't know which ones, and it's hard to tell. Some of it's good. Some of it's good, but keep in mind that if there isn't reality, there's law and there's reality. There's what the law says, and then there's what probably will really happen. You got to have both. And that's to deny that is to deny the human element in law. As I said a while ago, judges are people. They get mad, they get sad, and they're insecure, they're stupid, just like the rest of us. And they're forgetful, and they get their feelings hurt, and you can insult them, and you don't want to do that. Don't go into court just doing what, like, blow in there and say anything you want. No. Show respect. They're human. You want respect, I know, and I want to be respectful, and I want you to be respectful. And that's part of our problem. We're not recognizing that it's more important how we go about it than it is what we do. And that's our common law. Our common law stresses how we do things, not what we do. but how we do it. It is the course, the path, the way, the due process. Go ahead.
Okay. What I'm saying is, by my birth certificate being in common law, that means I'm alive. Okay, just like the other gentleman was saying, between one person, a small letter name, is a person, a living person, and all caps person is a corporation, which is civil, they deem civis mortis. Okay? If you file paperwork against me in the civil or the corporation, or we're in the corporation, and I'm alive, then you don't have, like as you were talking about jurisdiction, you don't have jurisdiction because I'm a living being, you know, in law, which is fits into the common law. Okay? That's why I didn't look, that's why I didn't get into all that other stuff you were talking about, like legislators and all that. Because like you were saying, the legislature and the courts and everything going to run you around the circle, was because that's statutes. Somebody like this person, you know, who did this to me, filing something in statutes, going through Social Security and whatnot, bypassing due process and whatnot, and trying to steal my rights, freedoms, and liberties, is breaking the law. They're committing crimes. They're not aware that, you know, that I'm dealing in common law, that I'm dealing from a religious standpoint. Even though I sit there and I told her to her face, I say, lady, I'm a minister. And she just said, what church you reach in? And so it went over her head, and so she went on and did what she did anyway. But what I'm saying is, I need to really look, I need to finish, there's some things I need to finish also, but I need a remedy to, you know, get them off of me and get them out of my life and trying to control my life. That's what I need.
Yeah, I do too, and there's a lot of us that have been abused. There are more that will be abused because the ones that hold power and not authority abuse them. And the question then ultimately is, as Paul the Apostle says, how do we live in this evil, twisted world and not be a part of it? And that's what you're asking. And people have different kind of answers, different groups have different answers. The Amish say, well, we're going to live out in the country and wear clothes different than everybody else and have X number of buttons on our pants and do some other things, disconnect our electricity and whatnot and stay out. You're asking a little bit different question, but the question is always the same. How do you keep people from abusing you? Well, we're at the top of the hour. That is the question. You have expressed it in your own way. I appreciate you doing that. Top of the hour, it's been 3 hours. And it's time for the call to be over. I don't know what happened to John and Gerard. Nobody's got a clue, I don't think. But we appreciate your time coming and listening. And appreciate your questions and your comments, all of them. And we hope you come back next week. And Terry, I'm going to let you cut it off then.
Okay, thank you, Brent. And let me say again, you filled in on a spur of the moment, and we appreciate all that you did tonight. And thank you very much, and we really appreciate it. And so for everyone else, it's midnight. I'm not going to ask Brent more than midnight, and thank you very much. Come on back. Gerard and John are broke down in a car. They're trying to get it fixed, but they were worried that they weren't going to make it here tonight, and they did not. So nothing bad has been done. They're just trying to get home. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Terry.